It's time for Ask the Tech Guys. I'm Leo Laporte. Coming up, Sam Abul-Samad, our car guy, explains why Elon's winning.
And I'm Micah Sargent, and we take a look at, it might be an older device, but is the Kindle Oasis still worth the cost?
Then, can you charge your e-bike at a car fast charging station? It's Ask the Tech Guys next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Ask the Tech Guys with Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte, episode 1978, recorded Sunday, June 11th, 2023. It's made of people. This episode of Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Brooklinen. This year, dads deserve a good night's sleep. They deserve the best rest, and Brooklinen has their comfort covered with a lineup of home essentials made for relaxation. Visit brooklinen.com today and get $20 off plus free shipping on orders of $100 or more with the code TECHGUY. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by Thinkst Canary, because thousands of ignored alerts help nobody. When somebody's in your network, you'll get the one alert that matters. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Miro. Miro is your team's online workspace to connect, collaborate, and create together. Tap into a way to map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team. Get your first three boards for free to start creating your best work yet at Miro.com/podcast.
It's time for Ask the Tech Guys, the show where we take your questions live on air. We look at them, we examine them, and then we go, maybe we can answer them. I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent.
And hey, I'm Leo Laporte.
Hello.
And we have a new mission to take as many questions as we can. We have voicemails. Oof. We have calls. We have 888-724-2884. We have Zooms at call.twit.tv.
We have emails at atg@twit.tv.
It's a busy, busy day. We're going to get as many calls as we can. Sam Abul-Samad is coming up. And that's pretty much the show.
Yeah.
That's it.
Locked in.
Did anything at all happen this week?
As I was driving in, I thought, wait, that was this week, wasn't it? It's been a heck of a week.
You know what happened?
What happened?
Exactly what I predicted would happen, which is once Apple announced and they're calling it the Vision Pro, their nerd goggles.
Yes, the nerd goggles.
The first day, you were at the event, so I would love to know how that was. But the first day and the second day, people were singing its praises like crazy, right? Going crazy. Because anytime you try these on, whether it's the Quest Pro or the first Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive, when you try them on, the Magic Leap, the HoloLens, all of these, it's like, wow, the world is about to change. Computing is about to change. And then about 24 hours later, it wears off.
Sober out, right?
I don't know if you saw, but like Wired had, I thought I was negative. Wired had the most like negative thing I've ever seen. More and more reviews are coming out where people are saying, yeah, it's cool, but what's your thought?
So I'm there. I was surprised at the number of people who, as we were walking away from the event, were saying that very thing. Yeah, it was cool, but the people that were surrounding me, the other press folks, were in that mode. And then some of them did, as you point out, get to try it.
You try it on, you go, and it's then really
it's like,
cool.
Whoa, you know, but then that sobering happens again. That sobering takes place. I think that the biggest thing here is that, yes, this is an amazing device. Yes, it's got great hardware. Yes, it's all Apple-y, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, you're still left wondering, who exactly is this for? Who outside of very sort of Apple-y geeky folks are going to actually use this?
Yeah.
And to call it the future is perhaps a little bit off the path.
And it's $3,500 and it's not available like till next year.
Right.
Who knows, you know, what that means. Early next year, it could be May 3rd. It could
somebody asked one of the guy who was actually Mike, I believe is his first name. And I wish I could remember his last name, but in charge, an Apple exec who's in charge of this Vision Pro. And they said, what does early next year mean? When is it coming out? And he said, it's coming out before late next year.
Well, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Notice none of the Apple executives were shown wearing it. I think that's the first time Apple's introduced a new product where they didn't act, you know, Steve didn't hold the iPad.
Right.
You know, it's like, maybe that's because it really isn't like close to done.
So something that I learned about the lenticular display on the front of it. So on Wednesday.
By the way, I predict when it comes out, they will not have creepy eyes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're going to dump that because it's a terrible idea.
Here's why
they're going to dump it.
I don't think they will because I think that they did too much engineering to not do that.
It's got to be an expensive part.
Yes.
It's got to be $500 of the whole thing.
That is one of the most expensive parts. So on Wednesday, I went back to San Jose to see the talk show live, which is John Gruber's show, where regularly he brings in actual Apple execs. So Craig Federighi was on the stage. By the way, when he played that guitar in the keynote, he actually was playing the guitar. He played it that night live in front of all of us, which was really cool. But when they were talking about this headset, the lenticular display, which for folks who don't know means that it's a display that has kind of triangular prisms that are stacked next to one another so that if you're looking at it from dead on, you can see something. If you're looking at it from the edge, you can see something, all these different sides. And this is what they're doing. They're not just rendering one view of your eyes, because if you looked dead on, you would see the eyes. But for every single crevice of that display, there are like eight, I can't remember how many, let's say 16 views. Each of those 16 views has your eyes rendered as if you were looking at it from, it's so over-engineered.
And I misunderstood this because in the past, you've seen those postcards, you know, where the eyes follow you. Mm-hmm. They don't follow you on this. You just see a side view
Correct.
Of the eyes,
yeah.
Which is better because the
yeah, it's not as if the eyes
enough.
Are still looking dead on you. Exactly.
They're creepy enough.
That would be bad. And also it's not a lot of folks thought in the sort of early after the event that it was like the 3D model, that the eyes were just kind of like scanned of you and that they were shown there. No, this is actually this is a real view of your eyes live. So when you squint, you can see the eyes moving. So it's actually displaying.
But is it like
a
Memoji where it's a fake view that's duplicating what your eyes
are
doing?
Think of it like a camera.
It's not a camera on your eyes directly.
Exactly. So, well, that.
Or is it?
That's unclear to me. Exactly. That's unclear to me.
We don't know. We'll find out or not. I'm going to say it will not ship with that.
That's a waste of that lenticular display then.
Yeah. But, well, this is the problem with the whole thing.
It's
was
a lot.
They spent so much money and time, like a decade and billions, probably hundreds of billions in going into this. They couldn't hold back. It's like, we got to show you all of it. But the first thing that's got to go is creepy eyes. I'm sorry. And maybe it's just me. And I will admit this could just be my point of view, but I just don't want to strap a computer to my face.
Yeah.
I just think that to me, I have a visceral kind of revulsion to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And have done that many times. And I just don't think that's a popular thing that people want to do. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, is all definitely a we'll see, because I can't say for sure yet how I'm going to feel about it because the big aspect of this, in my opinion, that sets this apart is how much of it is really focused around still showing you the view around you. And one of the things, again, that they had talked about.
That's to keep you from getting sick, I think.
Keep you from getting sick. They, you know, of course, market it as not being disconnected. But I think ultimately for me, that would potentially make me feel less like I had something strapped to my face. But
maybe.
Who knows?
But everybody else thinks you have something strapped to your face.
Everybody else knows I've got something strapped to my face, so nobody wants to be around me.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in the corner
really,
by myself.
Really, seriously, you're not going to want to be around somebody like that.
Yeah.
I don't think.
No, I agree. The way
if I were sitting here wearing those, you would almost be insulted.
Yeah.
You can't be bothered to be in the room with
right.
me. You have to have something. It's bad enough people stare at their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel insulted when you're at dinner with somebody and they're looking at their phones. That's insulting.
Yeah. You look at your watch, people.
Imagine they had this on. No, I'm looking at you. I can see you. Honest, I can see you. No. Anyway,
it's
fitting, though, that this be released on the 30th anniversary actually yesterday or today was the 30th anniversary of the release of Jurassic Park.
Oh.
And the reason that's important is because that was the first movie to use computer generated graphics of the dinosaurs,
caliber, yeah.
Not models. In fact, it's a great story. You watched that documentary.
Oh my God. Amazing documentary.
About LucasArts,
Light and Magic. Light it's and just magic. Called Light and Magic. Light, yeah.
Industrial Light and Magic, in which they were building a life-sized raptor or Tyrannosaurus Rex. In the middle of that, one of the graphic geniuses, computer geniuses, shows Spielberg an animated dinosaur, and Spielberg says, "Whoa, wait a minute! We could do the whole thing that way." And it was the watershed.
Yes,
between everything that had gone before, which was basically models, like the original Star Wars was all physical models or animatronics, and completely computer generated graphics. And it's because of Jurassic Park, a lot of directors saw that, and all these Lucas himself decided to do the prequels. Mm-hmm. All of these directors said, whoa, this changes everything. So in a way, 30 years ago, everything changed with computer graphics in movies. Here we are 30 years later, and we're going to strap, an alien to our head. What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? I don't think I'm as far as Kate Nibbs in Wired.
She was like,
yeah,
I loved it. Because I've been feeling bad. I thought, oh, I'm really harshing everybody's mellow by saying, oh, this is a terrible thing. Nobody wants this. And Kate, Apple's Vision Pro isn't the future. Subtitled Flop Era. The new mixed reality headset is an alarming misfire. Has Apple lost its innovation mojo? I thought I was bad. I thought, good for you. She says, I'm not a gambler, but I bet everything that Apple's Vision Pro will flop. It's kind of what I've been saying, but I feel bad saying it.
So I want to ask you something because you have the benefit of context here, which is a nice way of saying that you're older than me.
I have seen.
You've seen the past. Yeah. You've glared into the abyss. I am curious what you think about the number of people who I have seen who are sharing some variation of, well, my parents or my teacher or the school or this bought me an Apple II back in da-da-da, and that would have been $10,000. Is this, in your mind, the same situation?
It's interesting. I think it was Harry McCracken who did the inflation calculator on the price, $3,500, and pointed out that the Apple One, the first Apple, which was $666.66 in modern dollars would be almost $4,000. So it's true. In the early days of computing, these computers were prohibitively expensive. I remember pressing my nose against the glass and looking at the Apple leases saying, I wish I could afford that, but it was $10,000 in 1983 dollars. But then in 1984, the Mac came out, and I remember I couldn't afford it, but I had a Macy's card, and I went down to Macy's and charged it. It was $2,500 in 1984 dollars, which would probably be three or four times more today. So, yes, computing has traditionally been expensive. In fact, we're in an amazing era of inexpensive computing. For a long time, it was what we used to say is the computer you want is always $2,500. It's not true anymore. Although, interestingly, I just paid $2,500 for a 15-inch MacBook Air. So the computer I wanted was. That's the other thing. I feel bad for Apple. They finally announced the Mac Pro, right?
Right.
After years of promising, it's more than a year late. No news.
No. All of that was just secondary.
15-inch MacBook Air, which is undoubtedly going to be the best-selling Mac of all time. Certainly the current. The Airs are the current best-selling Macs.
And you should hear, again, I should have people's names. The Matt, what is it? Turnus is his
last Turnus. Name. Yeah, John Turnus.
John Turnus. John Turnus was at the talk show. And you should hear how they talk about MacBook Air as a whole, not even just the 15-inch.
It's a big product.
Apple really seems to enjoy their MacBook Airs. And of course, yes, the people seem to enjoy it as well. But they put a lot of focus on that and actually was surprised at how much they talked about gaming and seeing something as small as this being able to do that.
And people finally have caught on a little bit. At the time it was buried, but Apple at one of the tracks at WWDC, their developers conference this week, said, you know, you should really be porting your PC games over to the Mac. And so to show you how well they would run on a Mac, we've modified something called Wine, which is a way of running Windows programs on Linux without Windows. We've modified Wine so that you can run your high-end PC game on a Mac and see how well it would run. And the people who noticed this, including, I can't remember his name, TSAI, I think it was John Tsai. Anyway, he posted the video about it that opened my eyes to it, said, wait a minute, there's an emulator that will run AAA games on a Mac right now. Forget porting it. You can run them right now. And a number of people, there have been pages put up showing how it's complicated, but you can get it working. And there are a number of people who are showing their, well, so I saw somebody run Diablo 4 on their Mac at 60 frames a second. This is huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
We'll see if people port their AAA games to the Mac, because I think a lot of game developers say that's expensive, and I don't know if there's a market, so I don't know if I'm going to. By the way, I did spend a few hours over the weekend playing Diablo. I'm a big Diablo fan. Played Diablo 1, 2, and 3. Played 3 several times through. So I was excited. Diablo 4 came out this week. It's one of the big games from Blizzard. The reviews have been somewhat negative. Blizzard got in a lot of trouble with Diablo Immortal. Remember, they put that out on the iPad.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say iPad game, yeah.
Yeah, an iPhone. And got in a lot of trouble because it was a greedy game. You know, in order to really win this game, you had to give them a lot of money. Free to play, you know. Diablo 4, I saw one review saying, is so grim, is so dark, is so nasty, and you have to play it all the way through to get to the end before you can even do the fun stuff. He said, it's just too grim. I don't know. It's Diablo. It's not so different from Diablo 3. And it was fun to see Diablo again. It was really nice to see it again. So that's what else. Is there anything else that happened? I ordered a MacBook Air 15. I'll have that next show.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. Did not get Midnight Blue, as I told you. Mm-hmm. Magnet, fingerprint magnet.
It is.
I have a Midnight Blue 13-inch, and it's fingerprint magnet. I actually put it in a plastic case to avoid the fingers.
Keep it safe.
So this time I got the silver.
Nice.
Old school. I went old school.
Yeah. That'll be a good one. I did want to ask you a question. Why did the Scarecrow win an award?
Actually, ChatGPT tells me it's because he's outstanding in his field.
Indeed, it is because he's outstanding in his field.
Isn't that an interesting report?
Yeah.
So this, by the way, the one thing that I focused on is this report on the jokes that ChatGPT, and by the way, it's 3.5, not the newest one, but 3.5 tells, was from two German scientists. So they say Germans don't have a sense of humor. Yeah,
clearly, they at least know enough to be able to get it to do some jokes.
So what did they find?
Yeah, so according to this Ars Technica article about the research report, over 90% of the 1,008 generated jokes were the same 25 jokes. They go on to list some of the jokes. The one that I just asked was said 140 times as they prompted the chat to
terrible dad
yeah, they're
jokes.
Bad they're why did terrible. The tomato turn red because it's all the salad, like this is, do you remember Laffy Taffy? You'd get these little pieces of taffy and they'd have underneath the flap the jokes. All of these jokes are from the back of Laffy Taffy. They're not good.
So are you saying that ChatGPT 3.5 was trained on Laffy Taffy?
I may be saying that. That's Willy Wonka trained ChatGPT 3.5 at least. And of course this all depends on how you prompt it. If you're just asking for jokes straight up.
But Alexa does the same thing. And so does.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, don't ever ask Amazon's Echo for to tell
some
a joke.
Some of the worst
They're
jokes.
The worst.
They're so groan worthy. Which, look, I like a groan joke, but they're so, ugh. Waste of time, waste of the second of my life it took.
So the big story this week is going to be Reddit.
Yeah.
One last news story, then we'll start taking some calls. And again, the phone number, don't forget, 888. I forgot. So
724.
Down there. Yeah, there you go. 724.
2884.
Thank you, John Ashley. What would I do without you? Reddit is right now going through a rebellion. You know, I don't know if you remember, but the Arab Spring began in Tunisia when people, this was some years ago, and Twitter had something to do with it, Facebook had something to do with it. People started to realize, you know, we don't have to be oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going through the Twitter spring.
Okay. Right okay. Now, I get it. Right? Yeah.
Where people look at Twitter and they see how one evil billionaire can take a social network and take all the stuff you've posted. Cause really Twitter, Reddit, Facebook,
YouTube,
it's made of people, yeah. Right? It's not the platform. Yeah. They provide a platform, but then the value of it is the stuff you and I and everybody else posts on it. So people looked at Twitter and go, you know, we don't have to be stuck in Elon's hell. We can go to Mastodon and Blue Sky and other sources of great pleasure, contribute there instead. One important point of this is people seem to want to go somewhere where no one can own it, where it's federated. There's no one person who can own it. So Reddit now, it's Reddit's turn. The evil owners of Reddit. Reddit was spun off. It was owned by Condé Nast. Condé Nast still owns a majority shares, but it was spun off to its own company and is about to do an initial public offering, about to put out stock. And so they're trying to beef up. They've never been profitable.
Right.
Which, frankly, to me, is bad leadership. Right.
Because it should be so easy to make money on it. Yeah. Right.
Seems to me bad leadership. Mm-hmm. Anyway, never been profitable. So now there's kind of, well, if we're going to sell stock, we got, what do you want?
The email is relevant to Reddit after we're done talking about
yes.
it.
Yes. And thank you, John Ashley's. So I used to do for many years in the beginning of the century.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do a show called Live with Regis and Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps you remember.
Yeah.
And their very famous executive producer is still there now that it's Live with Kelly and her husband.
That's actually how it's called, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly and the Man. Actually, be a good name for it.
It would be.
Their producer, the very famous Gelman, right?
Okay.
Even Kathy Lee's Gelman. So he had that little whiteboard, just like you've got, John Ashley.
Oh, really?
And he would write stuff on it, and then he'd tap it with a marker. So I'm demonstrating gadgets. And he'd write, move on. And he'd tap it with, if you didn't do it, he'd tap it with a marker.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, go ahead. Tap it with a marker there. It's That'll really.
Hi, Mom. Mom. It's like a little bit Pavlov's dogs,
Did
right?
you know Gelman?
Can you? I can't imagine. That would make me anxious. I'd be going, what?
Anyway, what was I saying? Reddit. Anyway, we'll watch because the Reddit boycott starts tomorrow. And a great many Reddit communities, they call them subreddits, are going to go dark for a few days. One iPhone has said we're going dark forever.
Is a boycott because of the IPO or because of the third party?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I left out the middle chunk. That because of the IPO, you're right. Thank you. They are now going to charge for access. And this means all the third party apps many of them already gone away. June 30th. Reddit is fun. Riff is gone. The big one, Apollo, is gone. Christian Zelig, the creator of Apollo, said it's going to cost me $20 million a year if they charge what they say they're going to charge. I don't make that much money.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to shut down the app. At that point, they had a conversation, which
did you read that?
Selleck taped.
Oh, my goodness. That was harrowing.
Yeah. Steve Huffman, who I know and have interviewed, the current CEO and the guy who wrote Reddit in the first place in the beginning in Common Lisp. Steve Huffman, who's the current CEO, he was brought back to run it, was kind of lying, I think is the only word you could say, about his conversation with Selleck. So Selleck said, well, that's good news. I've recorded it and here in he's Canadian and it's a single party state. So it was legal. It's a single party country. So it was legal to record it. And then Huffman gave an AMA in which he really didn't answer any questions. And when he did, he was dismissive and snarky. And now the entire Reddit, the hardcore Redditors, the Reddit community is in revolt.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to happen, but there is no good Fediverse style. There's Lemmy. Which is not, it's okay, but there's no real, this Reddit's one of those things where you kind of do need a central I think, spot. I don't know. I might be wrong.
Ooh, that's tough. Yeah.
It's very hard. Lemmy doesn't have it doesn't even have mobile apps. So it's like there is no, but it's not owned by anybody. It's not owned by Condé Nast or Elon Musk or anybody. So I think watch with interest. I will be, I mean, Twitter was one thing, but I will be very sad if Reddit goes away.
It's chock full of so much good information that you can't find elsewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, I would be devastated.
All right. That's just, I think, a heads up on what's coming this week and what happened last week. We like to do that every
week.
We
do, yes.
But now we should really get to some calls. Or yeah, should I do an ad?
You should do an ad, and then we should do an email in the
ad,
in the
email,
inbox.
And then calls. Okay, that's going to be the order. But first, I slept so lovely last night. I want to tell you about my sheets.
Your sheets.
Now, you know, I have that great mattress and you know, I have that great eight sleep. And my bed, our advertisers basically created my bed.
Right.
I got the Casper mattress. I got the eight sleep on it. But, you know, their final piece is great linens. And I got the Lux.
Yes, the Lux.
The top of the line Brook linens. That's their most popular bedding. You got the less
classic,
expensive ones.
Yeah.
And you're happy?
Yeah, because they sleep cooler and I am a very, very, very warm sleeper. So it's not woven as tight.
Brook Linen, that's the company. Their mission is to provide you with luxury bedding delivered to your door at a fair price. Rich and Vicky started this in Brooklyn, as you might imagine, about 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And it is wonderful. They are bringing some of the most beautiful curated designs, quality products to your home. Brooklyn has been making dream spaces a reality. It'll be 10 years next year for almost a decade. So they're the obvious choice when you're making your housing a home. Who wants to live in housing? I want to live in a home. If you're unsure where to start, take a look at the bundles. We got the bundle with the sheets, the pillowcases, and the duvet. Beautiful.
It is.
Slate
so nice.
Gray duvet. I love my duvet. The bundles will save you money, too, by the way, whether you're outfitting a bedroom or bathroom or both. These would make excellent housewarming gifts, wedding gifts. Really very, very valued. I got the Lux Sateen sheets. They have such a smooth, soft feel and a luxurious finish. It's the kind of sheets where you get into bed and you go, don't you love that feeling? It's fresh linens on the, oh, it's so nice. If you want a more natural option, they've just launched an organic collection. All kinds of sheets, but not just sheets. We have Brooklyn and towels. They are wonderful, puffy, fluffy towels. A great gift for any picky parent. Spoil your dad. Father's Day's coming. You know, people say, I'm not going to give linens to my dad. Let me tell you, I would so far prefer this to a necktie. If my kids, if you're listening, gave me some Brooklinen sheets or towels, I'd be so happy. What a great gift. Wire Cutter and Good Housekeeping both awarded Brooklinen for their outstanding bedding. They already have 100,000 five-star customer reviews. One reviewer, his name was Micah, I think, said, I seem to get that wonderful sleeping temperature very quickly and stay there throughout the night versus with my older cotton sheet sets. It wasn't Micah.
It was not me.
It
might as well have been, yes.
Another said, best sheets in the world like butter, might as well be me. Brooklyn uses the only highest quality materials for their products, long staple cotton, everything they... this is another pet peeve of mine is to have great sheets that wear out in 5 months. These not. No, they are built to last. Sheets, pillows, towels, bath rugs, totes, tops. Ooh, a robe. Father's Day.
Oh.
Every daddy would love that. What are you waiting for? Shop in store or online at brooklinen.com to gift yourself or dad the rest they deserve. Brooklinen.com. $20 off plus free shipping on orders of $100 or more. Just use the code TECHGUY, okay? That way they know you saw it here. And we tried to get Tech Guys, but they only had 7 characters.
It's
Tech Guy. The S is imaginary. Brooklinen is like Brooklyn, but with linen. So brooklinen.com. And the code is TECHGUY for $20 off with orders of $100 or more. We love our Brooklinens, both of us.
Yes, so much. I sleep cooler than I ever have before, and I already had, as we mentioned, the other sponsor helping me sleep cooler.
Yeah, now we kind of set, right?
We got
What else do we need?
I don't want to sleep anywhere else. Can I take it all with me if I need to go some other place?
No, they all stay here. We own them all. Email. Oh, look at this. From North Phoenix guy, anonymous. So maybe I shouldn't have read his email. Anyway, North Phoenix guy. Good morning, the tech guys. Can you please discuss why a lot of Reddit communities are shutting down or going private? Explain about how to join a private ones. No, you can't. That's the thing. I noticed our iPhone went private and I have no idea how to join it. You can't.
Oh.
Only moderators can use it. You could beg, but it's basically closed.
Okay.
That's the point. So let me show you Lemmy.
You can't ask to join.
I don't think so.
Through some sort of process.
Not that I know of. Yeah,
wow, private. So you had to just be there.
Basically what they're doing is they're saying we're gone.
Got it.
We're gone. So Lemmy, which is the Fediverse, the mastodon for Reddit, is Lemmy or join-lemmy.org. Just like Mastodon, there are multiple servers. So you can pick the server you want. I joined Lemmy World, which is the biggest right now. I'll log into Lemmy World and show you this because it's not yet ready for, much like Mastodon. I think it's confusing to people, not ready for.
Oh yeah.
Prime time. I'm going to log in. So hide your eyes. Don't look.
Wow. Right? There's so few users. 1.3K users per month.
What's going to happen? I think over the next there. Now you can show going to happen over the next few weeks. We'll see. But I think people are going to go somewhere else. So there are communities. These are their versions of subreddits. And you could see how many people are in the community, how many posts are in the community, how active it is. And there's analogs for many of them. For instance, I'm in Apple. But you see, there's only 302 members right now. So they're not going to be very active in the long run, I think, or in the short run, rather. In the long run, well, let's see. Let's see. So I subscribe to, you know, Apple, Diablo, Android, Bay Area, Fediverse, Culinary Creations. These are kind of, I'm trying to duplicate Formula One, ChatGPT. There is an Advent of Code community.
Oh, nice.
You know, this is one of many things that are going to be harmed by the loss of Reddit. Advent of Code really relies on Reddit. Reddit is the community for those coding contests I do every December. That's where you go to show your code and ask for help and so forth. I don't know if we can survive without Reddit. But Lemmy is the open source, no one owns it, federated version. As far as I know, there's no way to join our iPhone. That's the whole point. If you go to Reddit/r/iPhone, you'll see it says we're closed. And I think there's actually a post there.
Does that mean you can't even read any of the stuff there?
Yeah. And for instance, I can't find it now. I just searched for it. It's not there. Yeah, you can't read it. Let's see if I go to reddit.com/r/iPhone. That's how you go to directly to a subreddit. And the result is it's private in protest against Reddit's changes to API. Do not send us mod mail. Oh, they're sending you to Discord. So that might be the other thing that will happen is that it's not the same though.
Right.
These communities may go to Discord. I think
Discord is really, yeah.
So if you wanted, you can't rejoin the subreddit. That's it. It's gone. Unless you're a mod, you can't see it. Only approved members can view and take part in this discussion, but it says do not message us. So I guess you could ask, but I think what they really want you to do is go to discord.gg/iPhone. And then you will join that Discord. I don't think that that's in the long run very tenable, but I think that that's probably what Advent of Code will do and things like that. How many, I mean, if you look at my Discord, I'm in a few groups, but how many, you know, of course we have our Club Twit group, but how many Discord groups can you join? They're all over here on the left. I guess you could. I'm in Midjourney, Logseq.
I am in so many of them, but I don't use
podcasting
all of them that I'm part of.
Lisp and
it's so easy to start a Discord community. But yeah, I wonder about how's Discord doing, given that if I wanted to, I could spin up three in one day. You know what I mean? And I suddenly there are people joining it. And
it gets pretty complicated. This is a great question. We are, I think this is the Arab Spring for social networks. That's what I think.
We're not going to take it.
Yeah, we're not going to take it. I agree. All right, Jesse is on the horn. Let's go to our caller, Jesse.
Come on down.
Come on down.
You're the next contestant on Ask the Tech Guys.
Ask the Tech Guys. Jesse's in Zoom, so I think we're going to see him.
Hello.
Welcome, Jesse.
Hey, Jess, welcome. Where are you calling from?
Hey. I am calling from Lexington, South Carolina.
Lovely. I bet it's beautiful right now in South Carolina.
It is. It's actually raining a little bit right now.
Okay.
But the problem I'm having is I've had this Asus desktop since January 2016.
Yes.
And it is running Windows 10. It has Intel Core i5. And last night it was idle, wasn't really doing anything. And a blue screen of death popped up with the code kernel data in page error. And so I went through rebooting. It took me to the BIOS. I ended up going through Windows Boot Manager. Basically, before it entered the BIOS, it said, hard disk may fail soon, backup data may replace, something along those lines. I've checked the hard drive in it, and I'm running a defragment on it now. It was at 5%. Now it's down to 1.6% fragmented. With Windows 10 support ending in October 2025, I have all my important files backed up to an external drive.
Oh, good man.
And the cloud. But I'm just considering, should I just go ahead and replace the hard drive and wait until 2025?
Yeah, that kernel error means I can't load data from the hard drive. I mean, I guess it could be RAM, but it's the hard drive. And really, an eight-year-old computer, that's what happens. The first thing that's going to die is moving parts. The good news is you can not only resurrect that computer, but in all likelihood, improve its speed to the point where you won't want a new computer just by putting in an SSD. And SSDs are cheap now. So that's what I would do. I would replace that hard drive with a solid state drive. It will give you at least 10 years, I think, of reliability. It'll be much faster. And I was really pleased that you said you'd backed it up, because that's going to solve that whole thing. You don't want to restore Windows. You want to install Windows first, then restore your data.
Yeah, I have everything backed up, all my important files to an external drive in the cloud. So I'm good. If the computer crashes, I just have to replace the operating system in the program.
Yeah, reinstall Windows 10. The good news is because you've installed Windows 10 on that machine, Microsoft will just say, oh, yeah, fine, and authorize it. You don't need a serial number or anything. And then you can restore your data. And honestly, this is a great thing to do. I'm so glad you've been backing up all along. That's really the only hitch in that. And by the way, a hard drive of the same size as yours is going to be probably under $100. It's not going to, an SSD, it's not going to be hugely expensive. The prices have really dropped. Look at that. The Solidine. Now he may not, I doubt he's got, that M.2 hard drives. You probably have a SATA drive in there, right? So you're going to get a full size.
Yeah, I only have one SATA drive in there, and then I have an external drive.
Yeah. Yeah. The Solidines are good. That's actually the Intel SSDs.
Oh.
We talked to, we had Alan Malventano on a couple of weeks ago, and that's what happened is Intel spun their hard drive division off. So those great Intel Evo, those are Samsung's. Samsung Evos are very good too. But Samsung or Solidine, either one would be fine. Under $100, probably. How big a drive did you have?
Right now, I have a 1 terabyte hard drive in the computer, and then my external backup drive is 5 terabytes.
Good news. Yep, a terabyte's less than $50.
Yeah, you're gonna.
But I would actually go to 2 at this point. Might as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I you know, when I ordered my new MacBook, ordered 2. 2 is my new standard. Used to be 1. Now it's 2. I just don't want to run. I never want to run out.
You don't
want
to run out and have to use something else to manage it.
Yeah. So so it depends on how much money you got, you know, where your finances stand. But I think this is definitely, don't try to save that hard drive because it's just going to keep happening. And at some point you will be sorry because you'll lose data or your thing won't boot.
Yeah, I'm kind of on a budget, so I'm just trying to be mindful.
Get the 1 terabyte then, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a great way to go.
$50.
Sounds great.
Can you do it?
Yeah, definitely thinking about
it. Great to talk to you, and thank you so much for listening to Ask the Tech Guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Single best thing you can do to a computer really nowadays, put in an SSD.
Yes.
It speeds up everything.
That's the other thing that you'll be happy about is after you do that, it's not just A, you're able to use your computer again,
right.
But B, it's going to be a better experience for you because of that SSD. Should we go to voicemail?
Yeah, let's go to a voicemail. How about that?
Hello, Leo, Micah. This is Brad. I'm from St. Louis, and I do have a question for you. Never been able to actually find the answer. So I am visually impaired and have one eye. And I know that the Apple Vision Pro headset is coming out, you know, early next year. And I just want to know, would I be able to use it or would it not work because of my one eye? Or would any of the headsets work? Or am I just out of luck? Thank you guys so much. You guys are the best. Have a great day.
Isn't that a great question?
Wow. Well, first of all, I'm going to reach out to my press person after this episode.
What happens if you only have one eye?
Because I can't say with full certainty. I would say, you know, because so it depends on the technology, right? Because if you go to
I'll give you the answer because yeah. I have mono vision, which means I only use one eye at a time. Did you know that about me?
No.
So I only use one eye at a time. So in order to use any VR headset, I have to defocus. I have to consciously get both eyes working. You could use it. You wouldn't get any 3D effect or stereoscopic effect because you don't have stereo vision, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have one eye. Now, that one screen is going to work. I don't know what...
It's the eye tracking part. Then.
That's why you have to ask Apple because it depends on what Apple does. So he said, could I use any of them?
Right.
You could, in fact... You know, go ahead and try an Oculus with an eye closed. You can use it. You just lose the 3D spatiality of it. It's in effect a small screen right in front of your eye. There would be part of the picture would be out of view, but you can turn your head.
Mm-hmm.
And on everything but the Apple. The tracking is done with an accelerometer. I don't know how we don't know enough about the Apple to know how it works. But on an Oculus, for instance, when you move your head, that's when the view changes. It's an accelerometer in the headset, not your eyes. So you've got one eye closed, you can't see what's over here, just as I can't right now. But if you turn your head, the view in that single screen will rotate and you will see it.
Right.
So I think you could use somebody else's. Would it be the full experience? Absolutely not. But I can use it. I have mono vision. If I want that stereo effect, I defocus so that both eyes are used. But most of the time, they're not. And it works.
Wow. Is that something that you, or like, are you born with that? Or is that something that develops over time?
Yeah, well, I had as a kid amblyopia, which had a lazy eye.
Okay.
And was never corrected. I remember vividly, my doctor, Dr. Otter. Hi, Dr. Otter. My pediatrician said, well, don't worry. He's never going to be in TV or the movies, so it doesn't matter. And which is, I think.
Lord. Hi, Dr. Otter.
Hi, Dr. Otter. Can you see me now? if you've ever noticed, one of my eye turns in a little bit, and that's because I have a lazy eye. What's interesting is which eye turns in depends on which eye I'm using. So, for instance, I'm wearing contacts right now. This one is for reading. This one is for distance.
Oh, so you have two different prescriptions in your eyes.
And it's a lot of people do this without mono. It's called monovision without my particular lack of stereo vision. But even if I were wearing my glasses, when I'm reading, whichever eye the book is closest to is the eye that's going to do it, and it shifts.
Oh wow!
Back and forth. So I have I don't have exactly your condition. In other words, I don't actually literally have only one eye, but I only use one eye at a time. And yes, I can use the Oculus Pro. And if I want the stereo, I'll go to a 3D movie. In fact, maybe you've had some experience with a 3D movie. If you go to a 3D movie, it's not 3D for you anymore.
Right, because you need that to come together in the lens.
And I
right?
can defocus and get the 3D effect, but it's kind of work. So it goes away, because most of the time I'm only using one eye.
Huh.
So... those other ones should work. We don't know because nobody knows. The Apple Vision is, I bet your press guy doesn't know.
Probably doesn't.
He's never used
may
it.
May not be able to
I
answer
I can promise
it.
You.
Well, yeah, but can hopefully ask, because it's the eye tracking part that I'm
that
curious
won't work,
about.
Probably. That I would bet you.
Which is the whole thing with this headset.
It might reject you, yeah. But you can absolutely use an Oculus or an HTC Vive. It's just you won't get the stereo experience. You won't get the 3D experience, but you're not getting that in real life. You know what we do, those of us who have this problem, I can still get two fingers to join, right? Which you would in theory say, well, you don't have depth perception. How can you do that? It's with the with something called an eye saccade. Your eyes are always moving a little bit like this. Yeah. You can't see it. And so I, in effect, get stereo vision with one eye by saccades, by saccading. That's an adaption. It's not normal. It's an adaptation.
Wow.
Yeah. See, I'm an alien, but no one knows it. Let's do another. No, wait a minute. Let's get Mr. Sam Obul Samet on the line. Sam is going to be doing a takeover of Twit this afternoon.
Well, not just me, but my friends.
Robbie and Nicole are going to join us. Yeah. We're going to do a wheel bearings takeover on Twit. And now I hope you guys are prepared to talk about some of the news like the Vision and so forth.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But there's a lot
of
car
news. We do on wheel bearings. We just wing it.
Yeah. That's all I need. You know what? I don't know. Did you have something you wanted to talk about, Sam? Because I have some questions for you, which we could save for Twit, too.
Well, go ahead. Ask the questions.
One of the big questions in my mind, Tesla, of course, has a different electric vehicle charging system. They call it CAS, right?
NACS.
NACS.
They rebranded it a few months ago.
Okay.
So what happened was the rules came out for the NEVI program, which is the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. This is the funding program that was part of the infrastructure bill to provide $7.5 billion for building out a network of public EV chargers across the United States. And one of the stipulations in there was that in order to get the funding, they had to use what's known as the CCS connector. And as it happens, that's what I was going to talk about anyway.
Oh, good. Because GM and now Ford have both announced they're going to support NACS, the Tesla supercharger standard. And now I'm concerned Electrify America has just built thousands of CCS fast charging stations all over the country. What is the plan? Are they going to offer both NACS and CCS, or is CCS doomed?
I think CCS is now at the point where it's doomed. It is now going to be Betamax, diggity, and HD DVD of EV charger.
What? Isn't that the one that VW funded by being a bad steward?
So VW funded the build-out of Electrify America. In fact, they still own Electrify America. It's a division of the Volkswagen Group. And they built them all out with CCS, primarily with CCS connectors. So if you're watching the video stream, you can see over my right shoulder, up here, this is a CCS connector.
With the extra fast charging thing on the bottom. That's optional, by the way. That doesn't.
Well, yeah. So the original standard that was developed by SAE was called J1772. So if you're looking at the CCS connector, the top portion of it, the circular part with five pins in there, that is the original J1772 connector. That is only for AC charging, so up to 240 volts.
Oh, 240, okay.
Yeah, so that's your level one, your level two home charger.
That's what I use at home. I just use that top part. Yeah, but it charges pretty fast. And it charges overnight. I mean, it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
And then later on, about 2013 or so, they created an extension to that, which adds the two larger pins down below right here, which are for DC fast charging.
So on my Ford Mustang Mach-E, on Lisa's Mini, on our Bolt, there's a little flap.
Yep.
That's normally
for the extra
closed
two pins.
For the extra pins. But when you get to a fast charging station, you fold down the flap and you plug it in.
Right. And so that's known as the CCS type 1 connector. There's also a CCS type 2, which is a variant of this that they use in Europe, which has two extra pins to support the three-phase electrical system that they use in Europe. We only use single phase here.
So this isn't the first time standards have changed. CHAdeMO was very popular.
CHAdeMO was, well,
I shouldn't say it that
way. It was not
way.
Really very popular. CHAdeMO was a standard that was developed in Japan.
Nissan's Leaf uses it. It's the last vehicle in the U.S.
The Nissan Leaf, because, you know, it was developed in Japan. at the time when the Leaf was introduced in 2010, CCS didn't exist.
Right.
CHAdeMO was the only DC charging system that existed. Mm-hmm. So they used that and they still have that on there today. But
and you'll go around, there'll be CHAdeMO chargers. A lot of the older chargers in the US are CHAdeMO. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, well, and usually what they'll have is they'll have, chargers will have,
you have a choice.
Two cables on there, one with a CCS and one with a CHAdeMO.
Right.
And, you know, if you go to most, you know, Electrify America stations, there'll be, you know, however many, you know, 6, 8, 10 chargers there. One of those will have a CHAdeMO connector on it for Leaf owners. And then all the others are CCS.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Sure.
Yeah. So I'm guessing there's not an option to carry like a case full of dongles in your car.
Actually, most of the time you get an EV.
As it happens.
Yeah. So I thought you'd need like a bunch of technology or like, you know, but
even my Tesla came with adapters, but my Mach-E has everything. Yeah.
So Tesla does offer an adapter and you can also buy some third party adapters that allow you to plug in a CCS charger into a Tesla, this one over here. This is the NACS connector. This is the Tesla connector.
It's very simple.
And they developed this, before CCS was created. They wanted a DC charging connector, so they created their own because there was no standard at the time. So they developed that. And so Tesla, you can get a dongle, essentially adapter, that plugs into the NACS port and then has a CCS receiver port on the other side of it, so you can plug in a CCS charger to plug your Tesla in, or to charge your Tesla. And what we don't have right now is the reverse of that. We don't have one that allows you to plug in an NACS charger into a CCS equipped vehicle, but those are coming.
So is that how Ford is going to do it, which is bundle both, so bundle an adapter in or something like that?
They haven't revealed all the details yet, but what they have said is that starting in early 2024, all of their EVs, and the same is also true now for General Motors. They just announced the same thing. It's essentially exactly the same thing that Ford announced a couple of days ago, that starting in early next year, all of their existing EVs with CCS ports on them will also have a software update in there that has support for charging on the Tesla superchargers. So they're going to probably get some kind of SDK from Tesla, integrate that into the charging software in their vehicles. And so you will be able to take those vehicles, plug them into a supercharger with the adapter. And it will charge your vehicle and bill your whatever payment method you have hooked up to your vehicle. So you don't have to use the Tesla app like you do today. If you want to use a Tesla charger with a magic dot.
But it's your prediction that this is going to be the death knell for CCS charging. Yes. That everybody's going to. Will Tesla have a monopoly? Or are they going to let others use their patent? Because they have this patent.
So Tesla has publicly stated that they are effectively open sourcing the patent. I don't know exactly what they've.
Elon's definition of open source is very different from mine.
Yeah.
I got to point out, when this news came out, Tesla stock shot up considerably. This is the 5-day chart. They went up over $20 because people assumed that means Elon's going to own the entire electric infrastructure, like for charging electric vehicles.
That's not a valid assumption.
I hope it's not.
what we will see over the next 12 to 36 months, over the next year or three, is all of the other charging networks will start converting their chargers over, and new chargers will be installed that have NACS connectors on them. I have confirmed with both General Motors and Ford, I've talked to both of them the other day, that they're not paying any, they don't have to pay any royalties to Tesla to use this charger, to use this connector. And anybody can use it free of charge. Okay. What Tesla will get is they will get more revenues.
Yeah, because people will start using their superchargers.
Yeah, because the reason why GM and Ford are doing this, and I believe that by the end of the year, we will probably see most automakers do exactly the same thing that GM and Ford have just done. The reason why they're doing this is because the rest of the EV charging industry has failed us miserably, particularly Electrify America, but EVgo and Blink and ChargePoint are not that much better.
A recent study said 25% of Electrify America charging ports were out of service when they did the survey.
I was just over at my local EA station earlier this week. I was doing a stand-up with one of the local Detroit TV stations for a report they were doing on EV charging. And while I was standing there, you know, in front of a Mach-E that I was driving, it was plugged in and charging, and the charger right next to me said, you know, out of service.
But is that why is that? I mean, is there inherently something in Tesla's supercharger that these Electrify Americas don't have, or is it just the companies aren't paying attention? I mean, I imagine Tesla's got people maintaining the superchargers, and Electrify America walked away after they built them.
I think it's more the latter, because, you know, when Tesla introduced the superchargers in late 2012, early 2013, this was one of the big selling points.
Exactly. That's why I bought a Tesla. Exactly.
Because you could charge your Tesla fast. You could drive anywhere in the U.S. And be within range of a supercharger station. And so this was, you know, so they were trying to overcome the range anxiety problem people had with EVs.
Yeah.
You know, so you get lots of range in the vehicle. Plus, anywhere you can go, you can charge up your Tesla quickly.
Right.
This was one of their major selling points. And so they, unlike all these other companies, they have done a good job of actually maintaining their chargers, make sure that they work, and keep them reliable. So availability has been crucial. The rest of the industry has not done the same thing. Most of these other companies, they've done a poor job of maintaining the chargers. They're oftentimes you'll go and connectors will be, you know, the connectors will be broken. Cables will run over.
It's terrible.
There's a software problem.
There's nothing inherently better in the NACS charging. It's just they maintain them.
Well, there is one thing that differs with Tesla versus the rest of the industry. They have had an advantage similar to the advantage that Apple has versus Windows or Android, in that Tesla has controlled the entire ecosystem. They had their own chargers that had their own software, and they had their vehicles, and those chargers only had to work with those vehicles. So they could have the same software stack, compatible software stack in their vehicles.
Right. It's very straightforward.
You plug it in, it communicates, it identifies the vehicle, so it knows who to bill, and it just does it. And it works because they've kept it limited. And, you know, it's the same thing with Apple or on both Mac and on iOS and iPadOS and so on. You know, they have a limited scope of hardware that they support, and they can make sure they can test their software and make sure it works on every piece of hardware that it supports. Windows, Microsoft, you know, for decades has had this problem of you have hundreds or thousands of companies making all kinds of different combinations of hardware, and they have to test it with all these different variations. Same thing for Google and Android. There's always been less reliability because they have to try and support all these different hardware combinations. And the same thing is true in the EV charging business. EA, EVgo, because a lot of the issues that we have with the non-Tesla chargers are not necessarily hardware problems. They are often... many of the times that I've had issues, it's actually turned out to be a software issue, communication issue. They're not doing their handshake properly when you plug it in. It can't identify it. It doesn't know how fast it's supposed to charge. You know, there's any number of things that can go wrong. And this is a risk that Tesla faces going forward, now opening up their system to other vehicles. We've already seen this.
What happens to the nearly 1,000 Electrify America stations? Are they going to change to NACS?
Yeah, I believe so.
They won't have a choice.
Yeah, I believe that by 2025, when these next batch of EVs from Ford and GM and from every other automaker start coming out with NACS connectors on there, they are going to have to start putting NACS connectors on their chargers.
Yeah.
So my guess is that by sometime between now and 2025, my local station here that has six chargers, they'll keep the one CHAdeMO connector that they have on there now for legacy Leaf owners. And they'll probably have maybe two CCS connectors and three NACS connectors. And over time, those CCS and CHAdeMO are gradually going to get replaced. And eventually, probably by the end of the decade, it'll be all CCS. I predict that by 20, by the end of 2026, early 27, there will not be another new EV built with a CCS port on it, and probably sooner than that.
So if you're buying a new EV in the next year or so, well, there is nothing right now, but eventually GM and Ford will have this.
Yeah,
well,
GM and Ford have said that they will have, in addition to the software support, they will have adapters available for their vehicles with CCS ports so that they can plug into a supercharger.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from 2025 onwards, the vehicles that are built with only the NACS port, they will also have adapters. There's already adapters available to plug those into a CCS charger. And there's a list, one of my colleagues found and sent to me this morning of most of the charging system manufacturers have already said that they are, developing or are shipping, you know, have available to ship CCS connectors for their chargers. So this includes companies like ABB, Autel, Blink, EVgo. EVgo is a big partner of GM. They're building out something like 2,700 DC fast charging stations with GM.
I just don't trust Elon Musk one inch. Well, and I just figure he's going to find some way to basically own the electric vehicle infrastructure in the country. And then,
my guess is that Ford and GM would not have signed and done any kind of deal with him unless they had a contract that said, no, you can never ever charge for this, for access to this.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll charge, you know, Tesla will charge for the electricity that you use when you go to a supercharger station,
right?
But they will not be able to charge royalties, for use of this connector.
It's as if, at some point in our gas vehicle infrastructure, you know, Shell said, you know, we're going to make one kind of gas. We're going to let everybody make this kind of gas. And then all the vehicle manufacturers said, yeah, we're only going to work with Shell style gas. And all the, it feels like a monopoly somehow. And I just don't trust Elon not to exploit this in some fashion, form or fashion.
I would phrase that in a slightly different way.
Okay. You're the car guy.
Every oil company actually has, first of all, there's no such thing as pure gasoline.
Right.
Gasoline.
They all have formulas. Yeah.
Yeah. Gasoline is a mixture of octane, heptane, and a bunch of other additives.
Right.
It's blended in various ways. Kind of like Scotch whiskey, if you've been listening to Richard Campbell.
Yes.
You've got a bunch of things that are blended together.
Yes.
Have certain characteristics. It's got to have certain types of performance characteristics. So when you put it into a gasoline engine, it behaves in a certain way. But if you take gasoline from a Shell station or an Exxon station or a BP station or anybody else and do a spectrograph and look at what's actually in there, you'll find there's everybody's got a different formula. Or, you know, like colas. Everybody's got a different formula for cola.
But your car will run on any of the formulas. Right. So that's the good news.
You know, but what we have, I mean, in the early days of the auto industry, we did not have, for example, a standardized size for the fuel filler
for the
gas tank.
Well, this is what I don't understand why we never had a standard for this charging.
Yeah.
We had J1772, but.
We did. I mean, a standard was developed. The industry, apart from Tesla, came together and developed J1772 and then CCS. The problem is that while they were doing that, Tesla was actually going out and selling a whole bunch of EVs.
Right.
And so up to this point, they have dominated much of the market for EVs.
This is exactly what antitrust law is all about. Your dominance in one market should not allow you then to enter another market and use that dominance.
Except I don't believe that they will be able to dominate.
I hope not. I hope you're right. I just don't trust Elon.
The rest of the industry is going to use this connector, which is, the analog to, the standard size fuel filler neck for your gas tank. Every car today has the exact same fuel filler size. So when you stick the nozzle in there, it goes and it fits properly.
Thank you, SAE.
These connectors are, is that fuel filler neck. And, they're all using, in fact, unlike gasoline, all the electricity is just a flow of electrons. So that is actually going to be the same.
Right.
It's just a matter of whose label is on the charger. And so I believe that, you know, with this change,
the nozzle.
with this change, you know, GM and Ford and other automakers are saying to the rest of the EV charging industry,
get your act together.
You have to get your act together. Yeah. You have to make these things work. Otherwise, you will go out of business.
Yeah.
And
so in a way, that's a stimulating competition. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
because they really have failed us. This charging infrastructure has been, and it's not a technical problem. You're saying it's really just a maintenance problem. Like,
it's a business issue.
They have to care for their facilities and maybe just build them and then they walk away and there's nobody checking them.
Yeah. And part of the problem is the way that the infrastructure has been built out. You know, when you go to a gas station, you know, there's usually, you know, first of all, there's usually a canopy over the gas pumps. So you're protected from the elements to some degree. There's usually a convenience store there where you can go in and buy some terrible coffee and sushi that'll kill you.
Yeah.
but there's also somebody working there.
Yeah.
You know, so if there's a problem with a gas pump, you go in and tell the person working in there that, hey, you know, pump number 3 is not working, and they'll go out and put a tag on it, and they can call somebody and they'll come and it'll get fixed, you know, fairly quickly. With these charging stations, usually they will drop them into the middle of a parking lot in front of a Walmart or an outlet mall, you know, in Petaluma, and they'll put them out there. They're out in the open with no protection
slushies.
No slushies.
No big bumps.
And there's nobody watching over them.
Yeah.
And so what needs to happen is...
And there's a lot of gas vehicle owners who take delight in vandalizing them.
Yeah, which is just...
That's true. So I think, you know, increasingly what we're going to see in the coming years is a shift more to something like the gas station model. Yeah. And this will actually help. Because, you know, if you look at a gas station, most of their revenue for the gas station owner does not come from selling gas. They're usually selling it at cost.
Yeah.
That's from selling those terrible hot dogs and dangerous sushi and awful coffee that's been sitting there in the pot all day. And that's where their profits come from.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly with charging, because you usually do have to sit around for 20, 30, 40 minutes. Having a little restaurant or convenience store or something there will make it an advantage, you know, to use that station versus using the charging station that's in the middle of the Walmart parking lot or behind the outlet mall. And so I think the experience will get better for everyone, hopefully, over the next several years.
Sam, we're going to see you and Nicole Wakefield and Robbie.
Wakeland,
I'm sorry. And right now, I don't even want to say Robbie's last name.
Baldwin.
Baldwin will be, and Sam Abul Samad will be our special panel this afternoon on Twit. And I'm sure this will be one of the topics of conversation, but there's a lot more in car news. And
Nicole and I were in Austin together for an event for a manufacturer, and afterwards we went for a ride in a cruise robotaxi around Austin.
Oh, fun.
So happy to talk about that one.
Yeah, the new cruises,
an interesting little adventure.
The new cruises are finally coming to San Francisco with no driver, no steering wheel, no nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. Living room on wheels. Thank you, Sam. I look forward to this afternoon. It's gonna be a fun Twit.
I'll talk to you in a couple of hours.
All right. Take care. Thank you. I guess this is good news. I guess it means there'll be competition. And if EVs are going to become dominant, which I think everybody expects that to happen over the next 10 years or less, we got to have a good charging infrastructure.
At the very least, to not have this untenable situation where you've got all these things hanging off of the side of the cord.
It's not good.
You're having to try to find which one.
And by the way, most of the time, as a... I'm a 4 EV owner now. Mm-hmm. Tesla, Ford, the Chevy, the Mini. Almost all, if not all, of our charging is done at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It's you have a gas station in your garage now, and so that's really the way you charge most of the time. It's only for road trips that you need a gas station or an electrical charger, and that, you know, unless you go on a lot of road trips or you routinely have a 500-mile commute. Which I know some people do.
Lord.
Lordy. Hey, let's take a break. We've got more calls, more emails, more voicemails. But first, a word from Melissa. Melissa is a leading global data quality, identity verification and address management solution provider. We've been talking about them for years. So proud of Melissa. They've just been named a leader by G2 for their Melissa Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite. G2 in the 2023 Data Quality and Address Verification Spring Report says these guys are the leader. They've been named momentum leader and high performer in the same reports across small business, mid-market, and enterprise segments. Melissa, it's kind of like winning everything. Melissa has received, listen to the recognitions they've received. Good partner, easiest to do business with, easiest setup, highest user adoption, and easiest admin. So all I need to do really is explain why you need Melissa and, you know, need address verification. And you will then obviously go to the leader, the best. Melissa ranked highly in the price category too. So also the most affordable for Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite. That's because Melissa's always said, you got to have a return on investment. It should always save you money to have data quality and address verification. Should never cost you money. Poor data quality can cost a lot, though. I got to tell you, $15 million annually. And of course, the longer the bad data stays in your system, the more losses you accumulate by sending out mailings to addresses that don't exist, by talking to customers as if they're a guy instead of a gal. There's all sorts of ways you can lose opportunities from bad data, incorrect mailings, poor customer satisfaction. And by the way, you may be in a business. In fact, I would say every business needs to verify identities, right? But you may have a know your customer regulations, that kind of thing. Seamless real-time identity verification tools as well. And customers don't have to wait for verification. It happens very quickly. Melissa's matching and dedupe tools help establish a single high-quality customer record. So all your customer touch points for an individual are in one place. You get a complete view of each customer. And Melissa works with USPS's move update requirements, which means you get the most current address data by processing in the United States Postal Service's National Change of Address Database. But it's not just the U.S., 240 countries and territories. Melissa is complete. They've been doing this since 1985. They've specialized in global intelligence solutions to help organizations unlock accurate data for a more compelling customer view. And don't worry, your data is absolutely safe with Melissa. They undergo independent security audits continually because they're committed to data security, privacy, and compliance. Yes, they're SOC 2 compliant, HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. Your data could not be in better hands. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's Melissa. Melissa.com/twit, M-E-L-I-S-S-A. We thank Melissa so much for their long-term support of all of our shows, including Ask the Tech Guys. Okay, Tech Guy.
All right. I think we've got a video question.
Woo! Let's see.
Hi, this is Mark, Data Nut in the Discord, longtime caller, first-time listener. I heard Leo was going to talk about the Kindle this Sunday, so I thought I'd ask this question about my 92-year-old mother who... as her vision is getting worse, I've been thinking about the Oasis, and it's a nice and lightweight and bigger than the Kindle Lights. Not quite, I think, as big as the Scribe, but I think it's quite a bit lighter weight. The one drawback on it is it's almost 4 years old. I've been waiting to see if there was an upgrade coming. The thing that I fear, though, is it might be dropped from the Kindle options. Just thought maybe Leo or maybe Dr. Mom or someone might have some insight on this, the Oasis. Thanks.
Great question.
Yeah.
As you know, last week I reviewed the new Kindle Scribe, which is both a note taker and a reader, but it's big. It's 8x10.
Yeah, huge.
I have my Oasis. And yes, for an older person, the nice thing about the Oasis, it's easy to hold. It's lightweight. And I gave my 90-year-old mom an Oasis.
Oh.
Because she was having a hard time reading, you know, small print. You can make that print really big. I showed that last week on the Scribe. You can make it so big that it's like a large textbook. And she went back to reading again. She loved it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I can strongly recommend it for your 92-year-old mom. It's funny. They haven't updated it because it doesn't really need an update. It's got a backlight. It's 300 dots per inch. So it's very high quality. It has, I think, all of the features of the Paperwhite. Its negative is it's $250. Mm-hmm. It's pricey. You don't need more than 8 gigabytes. Honestly, they make a 32 gigabyte version for even more. I don't think you need that because books are small. That's hundreds of books.
Yeah, not only are they small, but you don't need to have that many on the device at one time.
Yeah. So how many books can you read?
Yeah.
Although, you know, I have quite a few on there.
Yeah, you just download the ones you need and don't download.
And you'll save a little bit if you have the lock screen ad. That doesn't bother me. You never see it when you're reading. It's just on the lock screen. But it's, you know, it's only, you only save a few bucks. So that's up to you. But I highly recommend the Kindle Oasis.
I know folks who are absolute Kindle Oasis fans that still, you know, keep theirs going. And when it dies or something goes wrong with it, they just get another one because it's just a great, great model of Kindle.
Couldn't recommend it more highly. Perfect for mom because of those, you know, that large print. It has a backlight. It also has, you know, it can be yellower or bluer depending on daylight. And I like that feature. I actually read it in kind of a yellower format. What do they call that? They call it it's warm light. Okay, you can adjust that. What else? It's the same screen as on the Paperwhite. It's just so I think there's no reason not. I just think they didn't update it because there's nothing more to do. They do update the software, by the way. The operating system gets regular updates.
Yeah, you'll occasionally get new typefaces.
Love it.
Stuff like that.
Highly recommend the Oasis.
Great question. Video looked fantastic. Not that that's necessary. It's okay if you call us looking like a potato. We'll still take your video call. It's totally fine.
I wonder why the Oasis is $100 more than the Paperwhite, actually. I guess it's the backlight.
Yeah. And is it the materials too? Isn't it made of
maybe
magnesium?
It's aluminum
or something?
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's also waterproof. It's like, water resistant.
Yes. That's actually, I think, why I got the Oasis is so I go to the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they show, for the folks who are listening, they show the person in a bathtub.
In the tub.
We got somebody in the chat who goes, in the tub?
In the tub?
Yes, you can read in the tub.
Battery life is, you know, weeks, if not months.
Yes,
it's really
long
good.
Battery life.
I really think it's a great choice, especially for somebody who can't read anymore because the print's too small. You can read everything. Make the print as big as you want. What else? Who else? Another call?
Do we have, let's go to do we have a phone call, an actual phone call? They're called Wireless Caller. Sorry to read out your last name, Wireless
Caller. And we'll see. Let's see if 888-724-2884. Hello, Wireless Caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you great.
Oh, this is Kenny. This is Kenny. I decided to try to
smart
phone
man.
Call because the fact that thanks for taking it. I will apologize for it.
It works great. We're glad it worked. Yeah.
Oh, it does work great.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I bought in one of those new USB extenders, and apparently it's acting up on the audio side of things. But I just wanted to kind of chat with you guys. I have some good news I wanted to tell you guys.
Fire away, Kenny.
You know how we talked? All right. You know, I've talked a lot about IT and wanting to get a certificate. Mm-hmm. I got it.
Oh, congratulations.
Which one did you get?
Yeah. Sadly, I did not get it from ACI Learning, but I did go and sample the website and the videos, and that'll be something I'll definitely look forward to. I went to Coursera because in the job that I'm working at right now, a coworker, or actually not a coworker, but a visitor was recommending that to me as a way to, you know, you start off for free and you eventually have to pay for it.
You're talking about Coursera
trial.
You're talking about Coursera?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's not CompTIA as far as I know.
But no, but Coursera is fine. I've used Coursera for classes. They do a good job.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Which certificate did you get?
well, I am supporting the evil empire, or if you like to call Google the evil empire, but that's where I got mine from. I know that there's like Meta has it, and I even saw IBM, which I was real impressed with because I've always been.
Oh, so so you didn't get like an A+ cert or one of those kinds of certs. You got one of the Google, I forgot what they call them, but yeah, Google has a special.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Exactly. That's what I got.
Yeah.
I got one of those.
And has it, is and it going to help you get a job? That's an interesting question.
Oh, that's why I was calling you about, in terms of how to start off applications and what jobs to look for. And I guess I don't know if Ant is there or not, since the last time I called about it. What type of jobs do you think I would start out for? Should I start out in, like, say, a help desk or entree level or something along that field?
Yeah. And Ant, who has worked in IT, would be a great guy. He is not here today. He doesn't, you know, when he comes in on a Sunday, he does it out of the goodness of his own heart because he doesn't technically work on Sundays. So I don't know what Ant would say. These are the Grow with Google certificates that you got.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and the nice, did it cost you anything at all?
$50 after the 7-day free trial.
That's not bad at all. Yeah, that's really good.
No, it's not bad at all.
And which particular, do they have a variety of different, did you get the IT support cert? What job did you get?
Yes.
Or cert did you get?
Just Google IT support, but okay. I also got one for cybersecurity as well because I figured
perfect.
That will go in handy. And that was got me to get to try Python again. I haven't tried Python in months, so that was
great.
Good to get that, to shake that off and to get that going. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to also try. I've got one for data analysts that I'm going to try as well. I figured those three are the type of fields that I know pretty well. And it's funny because it was a 6-month course and I blew right past them in both of them within 3 weeks because I had the time to do it.
You know, job.
It's a matter of timing.
I'm so proud of you. Good job.
Yep. Well, thank you.
I'm thrilled for you.
I appreciate it. And I want to thank you guys. You guys are kind of like in 2020, you know, it's funny when the pandemic started, I started really kind of following you on a regular basis. I mean, I've known you, Leo, since, Call from Help. As a matter of fact, I see your hairstyle is definitely in the Call for Help era. I can tell.
I'm trying to pretend I'm 20 years younger. It's not working, apparently. Okay.
I understand. I understand. But no, it's working. It's actually working pretty well.
You like it, huh?
I do. And but yeah, you were kind of like my inspiration to finally get myself back into that field. And I want to thank you and Micah and all the shows that I've watched, including Security Now is quickly growing one of my favorite shows to listen to, especially with cybersecurity.
Well, yeah, I was going to say now that you've got that under your belt, Security Now will probably make more sense. Mm-hmm. And it is, I know a lot of IT security guys who listen, a lot of IT people who listen, because it is a great way to kind of keep up on what's going on in the current state of the art. Google itself has some job support on their site, on their grow.google site. I would certainly, I would start with that because apparently they've got a deal with, they say, 150 top employers to introduce you to them. And I would start with that. It's going to be an entry level position because you don't have any real on the job experience, right? But I think support is probably where you'll end up starting out in IT support. But I think it's an opportunity for you then to show your chops, build your chops. And because you have the cybersecurity cert as well, I think people are, you know, the boss is going to look at you, say he's a hard worker. He's smart. He's actually taken this extra test. Maybe we should look at him in our cybersecurity training because they're going to want to give you more training on top of it, obviously. But it looks like there's a lot of companies. I'm just looking at the Google page at grow.google. A lot of companies that they work with. So I would use that facility. I mean, that seems like you know, that's worth pursuing. It's going to be hard on your own to go around and look for a job, you know, especially not having experience.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the things I'm really starting to look at, even in some of the areas that I'm looking outside of that. But yeah, I'll definitely use their platform and see if it'll good to go. And by the way, before I let you guys go, I really enjoyed last week's show where you guys were talking about HP printers and all that stuff because, one, I have one at home and I know what it's like, but I also have used the Brother printers as well, and I find them at work, and I find them really quick. And I'll show you one real quick thing. I impressed one of the visiting managers because I was able to print something real fast because most of our printers at work uses Wi-Fi, and I was like, you know, I've got an extra cable. Why don't I just do it locally? And they were real impressed by how quick I was able to print stuff fast as opposed to the other ones. So I'm using my IT aspect in hand. Nice. But anyway, I just want to tell that story real quick.
Anybody who's listened to the Tech Guy show for a few years and asked the Tech Guys probably knows Kenny. And it will help if I tell you the town Kenny's calling from.
Cottontown,
Tennessee. Now does that ring a bell?
Kenny
from Cottontown. And we started talking, Kenny, some years ago when you were really thinking about, you were struggling with getting a new career, whether to go back to school, what computer you should get from school and stuff. I think you've done a great job. We have seen your progress over the years. I am so happy for you. Good job.
Yeah. Well, now it's up to me to take that final step and get a job in that field, and I'm definitely going to work on it. But anyway, I just wanted to give you guys an update on it, and I'll just let you know if anything changes. And I'll
one other thing to keep in mind, when I was starting in radio, I couldn't get a real job, right? I had worked in college radio, and they said, when you have some real experience, they said, that doesn't count. So what I did, and it's something you might want to do, is I went to the local nonprofit public radio station. You might go to a nonprofit in your area in Cottontown, somebody that needs help, a school, a charity, a church, and do a little for free. Maybe for free. I was doing it for free. Maybe they'll give you a stipend. Maybe they'll hire you. But going to a nonprofit and contributing your skills is a great way to get some real actual experience. So I went and I worked at the local public radio station in Santa Cruz at KUSP. I did a show, made tapes, continued to pound the pavement, eventually did get that first real job, commercial job. But starting at a nonprofit is a great way to get some real world skill under your belt. And I think an employer looks at that and they go, oh, that counts. That qualifies. And you're going to be helping somebody in the community. So you might look at that, see if there's somewhere in Cottontown you can pitch in, volunteer. Thanks, Kenny.
I'll keep that in the back of my mind.
Yes,
thanks. Congratulations. You guys have a good
day. So proud of you. That's great. I've been watching this. Thank you.
Yeah, too, watching Kenny. The growth over time.
Watching this growth over 3 or 4 years is really fantastic. I have another email here.
Oh, let's see.
Should I reach back into the?
Oh, get into that mailbox.
Mailbox. Oh, make sure the flag down. That's okay. There's no deliveries.
Every time I want to get mail.
This is from Gabe in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Have I ever seen this before? No, I have not seen this before. Hi, Leo and Micah. Like the new format, congratulations. Excellent chemistry. Reminding me on iPad today with Sarah and Leo. Yeah, that was fun. I remember those days. And then Micah and I did iPad today for some time, or iOS today. He says, that's the first show that brought me into the Twit subscriptions podcast, now Club Twit. We love our Club Twit folks. He says, going to Japan in August for 12 days. Oh, I'm so jealous.
Wow, that's exciting. That's one of the places I really want to go.
Taking his whole family of four. Need ideas for cell phone and data coverage. Yeah, the puck-like device. The old puck-like. I still have that puck-like device in my drawer back there. I don't recommend that anymore. He says, we have T-Mobile. They have data included, but it's slow. You might be surprised. I also use T-Mobile when I travel internationally, and they give you a certain amount of, they say 2G speed. Now it's 3G, by the way. I found it fast enough, plenty fast enough, and I never got limited. So you might surprise yourself. Hotspotting is going to be the different, though. Now, if everybody in the family has a T-Mobile account, you know, they'll be able to hotspot to their computer or the iPad. And remember, your hotel, especially Japan, your hotel, McDonald's, everywhere you go, there's going to be Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi everywhere. And so generally nowadays when I travel, I no longer buy an international travel plan or use that orange puck. It's in my, actually, John Ashley, you could probably find it. It's in the drawer. I know exactly where it is. In my desk, as you're looking towards the cameras, it's the drawer on the right in the back at the top drawer there. John or John Ashley can find it for us. The puck-like device, I think they're even out of business. I doubt they're, because it wasn't a good way to go. You can often, you get to the airport, you will see kiosks selling local SIMs that'll give you data and usually a very good price. I think in Japan it's pretty cheap. So you might look at that. The problem is you're going to lose, that phone anyway is going to lose its U.S. phone number. You're going to have a Japanese phone number on that. They may also have for rent that kind of MiFi. I call them MiFi, but they're devices that pick up 3G signals and turn it into Wi-Fi so that the entire family could use that one thing. They will probably have those for rent at the airport as well. Did you find it? Oh, you did. Look at that. I'm impressed. This is the Skyroam. And it was a really good idea. You'd buy packets of, I'm surprised you remember this because I haven't used it in years. You'd buy, this is the puck. It really does look like a puck. And at this point, I want to play hockey with it.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty much useless. You charge it up, it gets cell signal. And the idea was you'd buy a certain amount of connectivity and then it would roam to wherever you were. And it would work in many countries. And then it becomes a Wi-Fi access point.
So it doesn't have a switchable SIM. It's just through the company.
Yeah, exactly. The Skyroam Solus. I should check. Designed in Germany. So I should check and see if they're still in business. I think you're better off just going to Japan and looking at a kiosk. And as again, you don't really need this in the hotel room.
Right. You're going to have Wi-Fi.
Because you're going to have good Wi-Fi and it's going to be, I think it's going to be cheap as I remember. And most restaurants, yeah, they're still around. It's called Solis, S-O-L-I-S, Wi-Fi.co, and they still sell a hotspot. Oh, it looks a little nicer now. This is actually a little bit closer to what you'll get in Japan is a little card like that. And
and it has a power bank built into
it. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, 100, this one says 4G and 5G speeds in 135 countries. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. It worked. What I found was it ended up being fairly expensive because you ran through the data pretty quickly and the additional data was expensive. Might be worth looking at. The nice thing about doing this is you'd have it ahead of time. I don't think you're going to need anything. I think you're going to use the Wi-Fi in the hotel. I guess I must have gotten. The idea was you carry this in your backpack, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember we used it in England some years ago. And then Lisa would pair her phone to it and so forth. I don't think you need it anymore. I think this is a business that's gone by the wayside. But it is now at Solis, S-O-L-I-S, Wi-Fi.co. They dropped the Skyroam name. 135 countries, no SIM card needed. Share with up to 16 devices. You know what? Maybe the next time we travel, I'll pick one of these up and see how well it
works. The part where they don't have a SIM card where you could just use it as a Wi-Fi puck that is the SIM of your choice.
Yeah,
that seems more ideal in my mind.
Yeah, and as I said, you can get it now. Number two, is it safe to enter the master password for my master for my password manager 1Password over open Wi-Fi? Oh, that's a great question. Yes. So the reason is yes, the open Wi-Fi is open, but the communication between 1Password and your local machine is highly encrypted, is fine. And so what happens, actually, it's kind of interesting. You're not sending the password out over the connection at all. What happens is you enter the password locally, and that just simply says, now you're logged in. And so it goes to the 1Password vault and downloads an encrypted blob. It doesn't send the password. It just says, yeah, he's verified. Gets the blob, downloads it, and then uses the password to decrypt it locally. So it's completely safe. You're not sending, even if you were, it's over an encrypted channel, but you're not sending the password. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I think you're only sending a token saying, yes,
this person is
Gabe.
Yeah.
I verify it's Gabe. Now give me the blob. And the blob is encrypted all the way down. So nothing is going through. Even if you weren't using secure HTTP, if you weren't using TLS, which you are, it would be fine.
The conversation you had on security now, I found really fascinating, where the individual was making an open source, I believe, password manager. And due to the sort of, the way that it was so far away from the base layer of the operating system resulted in the one character at a time kind of being stored in data. And so potentially someone could gain access to that password. And I wish I could remember. It was an open source tool, and it was a password manager that some folks had used.
Oh, this is bad. This is KeePass.
Yes, KeePass.
Yeah, and the good news is there is a much more widely used version of KeePass called KeePass XC, which didn't have this problem.
Good, good.
So there was a problem with KeePass. It's been patched. Just make sure you use the most recent. If you are using KeePass, use the most recent version. But all the modern, as far as we know, you know, all the modern password managers, LastPass, 1Password, Bitwarden, they're all, and Bitwarden's our sponsor, but they don't have this problem. They're right. All secure. And I think, honestly, Bitwarden is probably the way to go because it is open source and because they're a sponsor. So we like them. Another call?
Yeah. Oh.
Use KeePass 2.5.4.
Oh, yeah. We do need to go to another
ad. Let's do another ad real quickly. And then another call. We have some, let's get a voicemail queued up. Meanwhile, let's talk about security now. Let's talk about security. This episode of Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. How do you know? You've built your security beautifully. I'm sure you have at work. You've got, as we have, all sorts of perimeter defenses. Mm-hmm. There's a problem, though, in the modern workplace, which is that people get through those perimeters using things like spear phishing attacks, right? Through your employees, through the weakest link, which is your employees. They get into your network. Now, we know this happens because plenty of people with good perimeter security still get attacked by ransomware. Once they're in there, they wander around, sometimes for months, sometimes for years. I think it was the Starwood attack. They were in their system for 3 years. What are they doing in there? They're probing. They're looking at everything in your system. They're downloading passwords, downloading customer information. Because remember now, it's not just ransomware. They blackmail you too. They figure out all the places that you send your backups, right? These intruders in your system are a huge threat. Great perimeter defenses, but how do you know if there's somebody in your system? You need the Thinkst Canary. It's a honeypot, an easy deploy honeypot that can be anything you want it to be. Our canary here is a Synology NAS, but it could be a Linux server, a Windows server. It could be Windows 95. It could be all sorts of things. You can set it up so that it looks super vulnerable with lots of open ports. I have port 139 open on mine just for fun. Or you can pretend it's a hyper secure vault. I think this is the best way to go. Challenge that hacker. Go ahead, try to get it. But in fact, it's none of those. It is a little box you keep on your network that will notify you the minute a hacker attacks. Just look at all the love that Thinkst gets if you go to canary.tools/love. That's it. That's the Twitter love that people have been passed. Some of the best, biggest CISOs and CTOs in the world use canaries. A big bank might have hundreds of canaries. A small operation like ours, a handful of canaries. You set them up to be whatever you want. They are quiet until somebody attacks them or opens them. The other thing the canary can do is you can create what they call canary tokens, files you distribute all over your network, work the same way. They phone home when somebody tries to open them. So I have spreadsheet files hidden away on various hard drives, say things like payroll information, Micah's social security number, stuff like that. Things that hackers are going to immediately try to open. And then when they do, there's nothing in there. I get a notification. And I get the notification the way I want it. You can have it via email, SMS, but Canary has supports syslog. You get a Canary console with your canaries. You can get it via webhooks. So that means there's pretty much anything you can use. They have an API, so you can create your own canary interface. Only the alerts you need. When you get that alert, it'll tell you exactly what happened, what IP address, if they tried to enter a password, what login and password they used. It is the best way to protect your network. Visit canary.tools/twit. You can get for $7,500 a year, 5 canaries. As I said, you may want more, you may want fewer, but just as an example, $7,500 a year, you get the canaries, your own hosted console, you get upgrades, support, maintenance. Use the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box, and you'll get 10% off the price for life. Now, I know you've read all the testimonials, you've heard me talk about it, but here's the other good news. If you're still skeptical, you've got a 60-day, 2-month money-back guarantee, full refund if you don't like your canaries. So there's absolutely no risk. I have to tell you, though, in the years we've been doing these ads, and we've been doing them for, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years now, no one has ever asked for their money back.
I love that.
Because once you get the Canary, you go, oh, this is a no-brainer. You got to have this on your network. Go to canary.tools/twit. That's the URL. canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. These guys really know their stuff. They have they've taught how to break into systems to governments and companies all over the world. They're brilliant. They're white hat hackers. Mm-hmm. They're really nice guys. And Haroon and his team are fantastic. I love them. canary.tools/twit. The offer code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. Thank you. Thanks for supporting. I didn't know it. They're usually on Insecurity Now. It's nice to have them on Ask the Tech Guys.
Hi, Canary.
Hey, Canary. Great to have you. Voicemail time. What do we got?
Hi, this is Harry from Carmel.
Hi, Harry.
And I'm wondering whether you have any information or knowledge on how to charge my e-bike at EV charging station. I've read some chatter about bringing your own charger, a level 2 charger, or one with that capacity, and getting some sort of an adapter for the J1772 plug with a NEMA outlet that you can simply plug into the EV station and then plug your charger into the NEMA device and charge your battery on your e-bike so you can cruise for miles and miles and take long trips on it. Any information you have on that?
What a great idea.
Bye-bye.
I love that. By the way, I have charged in Carmel at a public charger. We went down there, stayed at a hotel, and there is a city charger. In fact, that was one example where I knew these charges were, we were going to have problems. I used the app, found the charger. It was inoperative.
Oh, wow.
Had been operative for some time. And there was another one on the other side of the parking lot, but I went to the one that was dead. And fortunately, I found the one on the other side of the parking lot, but it was a slow charger. So that's an interesting question because, of course, the amperage of the J1772 or the public chargers, and the J1772, as Sam was explaining, is the little round part above the fast chargers. That amperage is very high. The voltage is also very high. So you'd need something that would step it down. That's a really interesting
question. Yeah, it is.
Question. Let me see here. I just got, here's a, on an e-bikes forum. I just got done installing a J1772 plug in my electric enduro frame.
Huh.
Okay. Wow. A lot of times the other problem is that cars have software. When you plug into those, there's a whole charging infrastructure, and the car identifies itself and so forth. He says it was a pretty simple thing to do, aided by the excellent Cycle Satiator.
See, this all sounds a little scary to me.
I'd
be worried about plugging something in and then my bike catches fire.
Yeah, I mean, the bikes are designed to be plugged into the 120-volt wall charger. Although in the EU, they use a higher voltage.
Yeah.
You could also charge your laptop.
That just actually gave me a bit of my heart did not.
Wow. Like that. Well, let me look at this Cycle Satiator. See what that is when it's at home, because that's what he used to do this. I'm gonna have to do a Google search on it though. Cycle Satiator. That's a really interesting question. I should probably have read those emails ahead of time. The Satiator, from ebikes.ca, but you can also get it on Amazon, is an interesting box. It is a programmable electric bike battery charger that will handle 24, 36, 42, or 52 volts. Now, it's not cheap, and it looks pretty heavy. You got to carry this around, $365. But if you have, you know, a basket or, you know, some, you know, panniers or something, you could. So it looks like, yeah, this is an interesting product.
Satiator startup video, so we can get you charging your batteries.
From Grin. So this is what you would need. It's a programmable battery charger. It's compatible, it looks like, with a variety of charging standards. It has XLR. You'd have to get an adapter to make it work with the J1772. Sounds like this guy was able to get that adapter.
There is a website also called EVSEadapters.com, and they sell one where on one side it's the NEMA, and then on the other side it's just your standard plug.
Well, there you go.
And there's a, I'll share
so
the article.
So you could
article.
Use that to charge your laptop, as I said.
Yeah. I'm not saying
so it's
yes
gonna
to
have
that.
To step it down, EVSE adapters.
So that comes from Scooter X in the chat. And okay. So there's a whole article in electricbikereview.com where this individual not only did this, but also looked at the amount of power coming out of the device and all sorts of stuff to make sure that
now this is ridiculously heavy. I'm sure $219. You see on the one side, the J1772 adapter you would plug in. And then on the other side, regular standard US plug sockets. Mm-hmm. It's a big old transformer is what it is.
So just carry that on your bike and it'll drop your mileage by quite a bit.
But what the heck?
They do have some other options that are a little smaller. That one in the bottom left corner there.
The J1772 to NEMA 515, which is, of course, your regular plug socket. Yeah. Now, if you're going to use this, it's only $100 and it looks like it'd be pretty lightweight to carry around. If you're going to use that, though, your battery on your e-bike has to handle 220 volts.
Yep.
Because it's not a step-down transformer. This is just a connector. So it's an adapter. Do some research before
please,
you plug it in.
Please
I don't want
do
you to blow
research.
Up your bike. But, yeah, that's for $100, fairly lightweight. You'd go to the charging station. You plug the charging station's plug into this side. Plug your bike into the other side.
I'm just imagining someone with one of those e-cigarettes and they come over and they have this whole contraption just to charge
their
e-cigarette.
Okay.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
So you can power anything that has a standard electrical plug as long as it can operate at 240 volts, which, by the way, because of international use, is usually the case. Mm-hmm. And you'd see that it would be written on your bicycle battery or your charger, so you'd know what you were doing. Wow. You'd have to carry your bike charger as mm-hmm. well and this adapter. Caution. Make sure your EV charger appliance is configured to operate on 220 volts before connecting to the charging station. Most charging stations operate at about 220 volts.
Oh, golly.
That's the other thing. Most.
And as someone points out, you'll also want to make room for your entire fire retardant vest that you'll wear while you try this to make sure it works.
Okay. And as our chat room is pointing out, and this is thank you, Eric Duckman. You also have this software issue. And so you want something that's going to signal. Yeah, it looks like it'll work.
Yeah. The ones on the EVSE adapters, most of them have something built in that will communicate and say, hey, yes, it's okay
I'm
to
a car.
Charge. Yeah.
I'm a car.
I'm a car. I swear.
Honest.
Your Honor, I am not a cat. Car. I am a car.
Wow. What a great question. And I thank you to the IRC for coming up with a pretty cool looking answer. I don't think I'm going to do this, but it's not a bad idea. Most electric bikes have a range of 100 miles or thereabouts. But yeah, if you're in Carmel and you want to go, I don't know, you want to go to San Jose, you could carry this with you.
It's a thought, at the very least.
Okay. What else should we do? Who else should we talk to? I see Jeffrey. In our Zoom, let me
Jeffrey
pick up
might
on
be
Jeffrey.
Driving.
Is Jeffrey driving?
Be very careful, Jeffrey.
Okay, Jeffrey, don't risk your life.
Mind the road.
Yes. There he is. Hey, Jeffrey!
Calling from a Tesla, perhaps? I see a big sunroof. Yeah.
Oh, he's riding in Model 3. Look at that. Jeffrey, we don't hear you, unfortunately. We do see you. Does he, I'm nervous now.
Yeah, I'm not seeing the microphone bounce, so the audio is unmuted.
And by the way,
Zoom.
Your daughter is going, oh, Dad, Dad,
keep the phone on.
This is fine just for the video.
I know.
Can you sign? Do you know sign language?
Oh, there's lots the wife. Of
the whole family's in the
Hello,
car.
Hello, friends.
Hello, everybody. We got to figure out. Look at this view. Now, wait a minute. Is this a Model 3? Is it my? Are we looking at a Model 3 here?
It's very.
Oh,
yeah,
it's frozen.
Cool. Okay.
And there we go. Well, that was a fun interlude.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jeffrey.
Might have you just call Jeffrey. 888-724-2884. You can probably use the Tesla's built-in microphone.
Redacted said the best way to get from Carmel to San Jose is put your e-bike on a Greyhound.
And go to San Jose.
San Jose. Let us go to a voicemail. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Nora, and I had a question. I wanted to back up my laptop computer onto online or an external disk drive. If you would please give me a call, I'd like some advice. Thank you.
Oh, well, we don't call back because
that is not a service we provide.
But we can help you on the show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are certainly a lot of services that do this. For a long time, we had iDrive as a sponsor, and I still think it's a very good way to do this. Before that, we had Carbonite. They're still around. There are many ways to do this. Probably the easiest is something you already have. Mm-hmm. Your operating system, if it's a Mac, you've got iCloud. If it's Windows, you've got OneDrive. And if it's a Chromebook, you've got Google Drive. So all three of the major operating systems, except for Linux, so three of the four major operating systems have a commercial entity that lets you do this backup very easily and transparently. If she's on a Mac.
But, I mean, aside from Time Machine, which is
that's local.
For local.
So if in fact, I do both. By the way, I should say that. Cloud backup's great because it's offsite. If you have a fire or there's a flood or your house falls into a hole, you still have, you know, somewhere out there in the cloud all your most important data is. But it's hard to get at it. It's distant. For day-to-day, you should have a local backup. So I think both is really important.
Yeah. In fact, I've got three means of backing up on my Mac. So I use Time Machine, which is something that you can set up very easily on your Mac if you haven't learned about it. It's a simple, if you hold down, if you go to Spotlight on your Mac to get to the search feature and you just type in Time Machine, you'll be able to find it. You can also go into your settings. But aside from that, which is going to do backups, and what's great about it is that it also does storage management. So you don't have to worry about how much space it's taking up on whatever drive you're putting it on. But also what Leo is talking about is a built-in backup tool where your documents folder and your desktop folder are backed up to your iCloud drive automatically.
It's a checkbox, and it's turned on by default.
Exactly. And if you keep most of your files on the desktop or in your documents folder, then it's going to be there anyway. Your photos are stored there already. Your messages are stored there already. So a lot of what you have on your Mac is incredibly portable. And then the third party tool that I personally use as my kind of third offsite is Backblaze. And that's just the tool that was recommended to me a long time ago. So I just love using that. And it runs in the background on its own as well. I don't have to interact with it really ever. And it's just there doing its thing. And it's very cost effective. I've got, you know, two Macs and they both have Backblaze and I'm running both of them there. But that's how you do it on the Mac. Very simple.
It's the same on Windows, oddly enough, except you're using OneDrive. OneDrive will automatically back up my documents and anything else you want it to. The thing I would always remind people often want to back up everything.
Right.
Especially for online. That's a lot of storage. Takes a long time to get up there. Will take a long time to get back. Just back up your documents. The stuff you create, it's a little more complicated when you're talking photos and music and movies. Media files are big and fat. For those, I think local backup is probably better than online backup. But for just backing up your documents or your My Documents folder, OneDrive on Windows, iDrive on the Mac, iCloud rather on the Mac, very easy to use. Google Drive works the same way. And in fact, Chromebook is designed to always be backing up to Google Drive. I think that's sufficient.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think you need to do more than that. The reason you want to have a local and a cloud backup is what I call 3-2-1 backup. And that was an idea that was created by a guy, a photographer named Peter Krogh. And he has a very good article on 3-2-1 backup on the internet. It's on a site he worked on with the Library of Congress.
Oh, okay.
Of all things, for photographers particularly, but it really applies to everybody. The 3-2-1 idea is three copies of everything. Now, one can be an original. That's okay. But remember, if you erase original, now you're down to two copies, right? So three copies of everything, two different kinds of media, local hard drive and cloud is perfect. And one of them should be offsite in case of the worst kind of disaster. That's what photographers do. You know, they can't afford to lose. They do a wedding shoot. You can't afford to lose those pictures. You're not going to do that again. They're not going to hold the wedding right. again just so you can take the pictures again. So that's what Peter created. And I really believe in it. 3-2-1 backup, three copies, two different kinds of storage, and one of them in the cloud. So if you do that, you're golden. Let's see.
What have we got here? What someone else? Is calling in. Is that the person?
Oh, yeah. Our driver is on the phone. Is that Jeff?
Oh, I think that was Joseph who was the... No, yeah. I think that was Jeff.
All right. I don't know. He was red and now he's yellow.
Yellow leather.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff. Hey.
So, can you hear me?
Yes. You're in a Model 3?
That's correct. 2021.
Very nice. You like it?
Yeah. I wish the range was a little bit better.
That's okay. Life. And you got the whole family in the car with you.
That's it. I'm being safe now. I'm not looking at, there's no camera now. That's
okay. What can we do for you, Jeff?
Well, anyway. We inherited, we have a Mac Mini, the new M1, but we inherited, ready for this, the 2008 iMac, like an older one. And it was a shame to throw it out, and we wanted it to get it working just like a spare computer. I put Arctic Fox on it, so the browser's working okay. My question is, what kind of Chrome do I put on if I want to boot it from the flash drive that you recommend?
All right. So first of all, Arctic Fox is an open source project built around Firefox, and they're keeping older versions working, which is great. It's also designed to be more secure, but you want to use Chrome on there. And obviously Google Chrome, what version of Mac OS is on that 2008? Is it Snow Leopard?
It's 10.6. High Sierra is
on the list. Yeah. And, you know, there are ways to get a more modern version of the operating system on there. We've talked about that before. But Snow Leopard is the last version you could get on that 2008 iMac. So you need something. Chrome won't work. A browser that will work with 10.6. There are so many browsers based on Chromium, which is the open source version of Chrome, kind of like Arctic Fox, which is based on the open source version of Firefox. I'm not sure though which ones will allow you to run on a pretty old machine. I would start with the Chromium project itself. So search for Chromium and see if that will work on 10.6. If not, my favorite browsers that are based on Google's Chromium are Vivaldi, which might. I really like Vivaldi. Brave. I really like Brave. That's also based on Chromium. I think Opera now is also based on Chromium. Opera might run a pretty old version of Mac OS. I wouldn't be surprised. The reason they're reluctant to, of course, is security. And so then in that case, it might be worth using these tools to get to a newer version of Mac OS.
Yes. So you can use... Because we've talked a lot about it on the show before, and it will let you. And you can see I'm trying to
remember the name ever.
We always forget the name
because it's generic.
Yes. So someone in the chat will tell us momentarily. But essentially, what it'll let you do is it kind of just ignores the fact. It's called Open Core Legacy Patcher.
Open Core Legacy Patcher.
And so what it does is it kind of ignores the fact that you're running on older hardware and lets you install newer versions of Mac OS, which will then, in effect, allow you to install newer browsers.
Yeah. So, ironically, your 2008 Mac is probably fast enough to run Ventura, the latest Mac OS. It's an artificial thing that Apple does to prevent you, and I guess to sell new computers. I don't know why they do it. I guess if I'm going to be charitable, they're going to say, well, yeah, it's going to run, but not very well.
Right.
Right. When you do use the OpenCore Legacy Patcher, there are issues. You can't, you know, you have to be careful about updates because, you know, things won't work normally. But you're now at least running a secure operating system, and you can now run secure modern versions of the browser, which is kind of what you want to do. So I would try that rather.
Now,
yeah.
Okay. Now my question is, if I wanted to turn into a partition for a like a Chromebox, can you put Chrome, like a Chromebox software on an old Mac?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You this old Mac supports Bootcamp. So I bet you that you might be able to, and that would maybe be a good use for it. It's really a shame. I have a bunch of old Macs too. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame because the computer and the screen are built in together. This is a perfectly good screen, which you could use with a modern Mac. Your 2008 might even support target screen
mode. I think it does.
Target in which display case mode you is- could use that screen. Let's see. I'm looking at
iMac models introduced in 2011, 2012, 2013, and mid-2014.
It looks like Chrome OS Flex, which is what Google calls their version of Chrome OS designed for Windows and Mac, does work on Macs. So chromeenterprise.google, which is a weird URL, chromeenterprise.google. And the reason they're doing this is for businesses that own old hardware. So it's a free upgrade. It might also run straight out of the box on your Mac. So that would be another thing to take a look at. This is actually a real gift to the community because these 2008 computers should not go in the landfill. You know, they should be somewhere. There should be somewhere that you can make this usable. So I would take a look at that. You can't use the Android store through Chrome OS Flex. It's a kind of an open source operating system. They also have it for education. Actually, that's the enterprise version. And there is one for personal devices. There's a link. You create a USB installer at support.google.com. We'll put a link in the show notes to this. I will also put a link. I forgot to give you the URL for Peter Krogh's great article on 3-2-1 backup. It's dpbestflow.org. And we will put a link to the page, the direct page on 3-2-1 backup at dpbestflow.org. It looks like I'm trying to see if they have a list of supported Mac hardware. Let's see, certified models list. And we're going to look at Apple and see which certified models for Chrome OS Flex. Even if it's not certified, it would. See, they're doing it by Apple Mac 11.2. I don't know what the hell that is. The webcam may not work. That's one thing that may not work.
Yeah, if you're just wanting the display alone, then you can get that.
Yeah. So target display mode, you said it will work on a 2008?
Yes, but it's only if you're connecting a Mac to
right.
it. So
you could get a Mac. What you could do is get a Mac Mini connected to that display. At least you're not throwing out the display. I think in order of operations, you should certainly try the OpenCore Legacy Boot because that might give you Ventura, solve the whole thing. Then you should take a look at Chrome OS Flex. You might be able to turn it into a Chrome box in effect, or target display mode is the last opportunity.
Yeah,
I think the least desirable is to run, you know, Snow Leopard with older versions of the operating system. It's just a little too risky.
At least desirable, least safe.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad we were able to get through. Is this for your daughter in the back seat?
Absolutely. And I tried target display mode. They said 2009 was the year you could do it, not 08.
It was a very limited slice of IMAX that could do that. That's too bad. Oh, well, we want her to get a good, safe, modern computer. I like the idea of putting Chrome OS on it, to be honest.
Especially with, we were just talking about the caller who was talking about backing up with Chrome OS. So much of it is just built in.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the files getting lost there.
Where are you guys going?
I'm thinking something, probably chilly.
Chili's. I want my baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back, baby back ribs. I want my baby. Anyway, thank you.
Chili's.
Thank you, Jeff.
Baby back ribs.
Goodbye, Jeff.
Barbecue sauce.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Now they're definitely going to Chili's. There's no choice. They gotta go. Our show brought to you.
I want a Bloomin' Onion.
I need a Bloomin' Onion. No, wait a minute. That's Outback Steakhouse, isn't it? Yeah, I think it
what? Is. What? I think they've got something
Does
there.
Does Chili's have something like that? Do we even have a Chili's in the area anymore?
Awesome Blossom is what it's called.
Awesome Blossom.
Awesome Blossom.
It's like a Bloomin' Onion, only it's not from Australia.
Right.
Our show today brought to you by Miro. We've been playing with Miro and having such a good time. Just don't call it a whiteboard. Miro is a solution for your team if they're going from tab to tab and tool to tool. And meanwhile, every time you switch context, you're losing brilliant ideas. You're just floating away. You need Miro. Miro is a collaborative visual platform that brings all your great work together, no matter where your team is, no matter what time zones they're in, because there's always a single source of truth. And the beauty of Miro, it can be anything. Whether you're working from home, in a hybrid workspace, everything comes together in one workspace online. Workspace may be the best way to think of Miro. And because it supports so many third-party tools, Zapier, we use it with Zapier. It works with Google Drive. It works with everything. Instead of having all your stuff spread out all over the place, it's all in a simple digital workspace. Miro's capabilities are so far beyond that whiteboard. That's why I don't want to use it. It's a visual collaboration tool packed with features for the whole team to build on one another's ideas, to build on your future. You could shorten your time to launch so customers get what they need faster. Miro is the one tool you'll need to see your vision come to life for planning. That's how we use it to plan our shows, for researching, for brainstorming, designing, feedback. It can all live on a Miro board across teams. And faster input means faster outcomes. Miro users report the tool increases project delivery speed by up to 29%. And they're also saying, on average, Miro users save 80 hours per user per year, 2 weeks of vacation, basically free, just because it streamlines the conversations and the feedback. You can zoom in to get all the details, zoom out to get the 30,000 foot level. You can move around. You can cut any confusion about who needs to do what. They've got Kanban boards and swim lanes. They've got everything you need. In fact, the best thing to do is go to Miro.com/podcast. Click that button that says on the left that says Miroverse and look at what people have done with Miro. You'll be blown away. Strategic planning is easier because it's visual and accessible. It's a great way to map processes. You ever use a mind map? This is like a mind map on steroids. And nothing ever goes away. So you can set up stuff, think about stuff, brainstorm stuff, and never lose any bits of information. It works with the whole team. They not only view it, but they have a chance to interact with it, to give feedback. And if you're feeling meeting fatigue, you'll love the timer. That keeps your Zoom meetings on track. Be part of the more than a million people who use Miro every month. That's kind of remarkable. Really is a great, great tool. And by the way, you don't have to trust me. You can try it for free right now. Your first three boards are free forever. Start working better together. Miro, Miro.com/podcast. It's an amazing tool. But I can't really describe it to you because it's different for everybody who uses it. So you just got to try it and see what you can do with it. It will blow you away. Miro.com/podcast. Okay.
All right.
I want to take a call.
Let's go to the calls.
Joe is on the line. Let me press a button. See if we can bring Joe into the magic space that we call the tech guy. There he is. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Joe.
Unmute your microphone.
Oh, are you a dog walker? Those leashes?
Look at all the leashes. And no, those are guitars, you fool.
Oh.
Can't you tell?
Look, I have got
that's
dogs
not
on
a dog.
Mind.
That's a guitar. Joe, we still can't hear you. See if you can. Is it us? Is it him? Is it us? Press. There it is.
I'm unmuted.
There we go. Now we got
there
you.
There you go. We hear you now.
There you go.
So
what are you guys doing?
I'm thinking you play the guitar. I might be wrong. Are you a
I'm a music producer, so I use them to help other people.
Wonderful. So are you in your studio right now?
This is my home studio.
Yes. Fantastic. What do you use? Pro Tools?
Pro Tools and Logic.
And Logic. All right. Nice. All right. Are you
I have to use Pro Tools most of the time because all my production partners use that.
Yeah. So. But Logic is a great tool, and I'm really pleased they put it on the iPad. So now
absolutely.
Yeah.
Haven't played with it on the iPad yet, but I'll get around to it.
Well, you don't need to if you've got a nice studio, you got a desktop. But I think just, you know, you're on the road, you're traveling around, you want to sketch out ideas. What a great way to do that. Anyway, what can we do for you?
So the problem I'm running into, it's more obnoxious than anything else. I use Apple Music for testing different mixes and listening to it on my AirPods and speakers. Mm-hmm. And whenever you look at it in Apple Music, it has the wrong graphic. And usually it's the TWiT graphic.
Oh, wow. So the metadata is showing an album cover.
It's just picking something because I'm not putting any graphic on there.
Interesting. So where does this music coming from? You're exporting it directly from Logic or Pro Tools?
Yes, okay. Directly from Pro Tools or Logic.
To your desktop or to a documents folder and then dragging into Apple Music?
I'm dragging it into Apple Music.
Okay. And then does it show up at that point in Apple Music on the Mac with the wrong album cover? Or is it once you have it on your phone that it's showing up with the wrong album cover?
It immediately assigns. It just picks something and throws it on there. And it's usually one of your guys' podcasts.
Oh, well, our podcasts have the appropriate content built into the metadata. So you should see it. Although I have to say, on my Tesla in the old days, because Tesla doesn't have CarPlay, Tesla would just basically pick random album art to put on top of the podcast.
And that's kind of what's happening. I've read about this, and people say the way to fix it is to delete everything off your iPhone and then start over.
No. So
that's what I said.
No.
In the music app on the Mac, if you go into the settings and you go into the advanced pane, there is an option that says automatically update artwork for imported songs. And you can either have that checked or you can uncheck it. I do not have mine checked. I have mine unchecked. I don't want it making any assumptions about what music I'm adding and what album covers it has. And then it keeps it as just a little gray box with a little music icon on the top of it. It doesn't assign it artwork. And then if I choose to, I can right click on that file, choose get info, and then add album artwork to it manually. If I'd like. Yes.
Got it.
And if it's coming from Apple Music, it's going to have that assigned. It doesn't just assign it because it thinks that you want it to. So if that's turned off, that should solve your problem. That should keep it from popping up with that Apple or with our TWiT thing on
there. Yeah, as you know,
that's
Jeff, there is a metadata in all MP3s, and part of the metadata is album art. There are MP3 metadata examination tools you could use to see if the data is actually there.
Yeah, I know about those.
Yeah.
And, the interesting thing is a lot of these are waves, which have no metadata.
Oh, there's no metadata on waves, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it still figures out some way to grab some rare.
It's making silly graphic assumptions. Probably what happened is at some point, maybe you had maybe downloaded a TWiT podcast from, just directly as a file. You dragged it into music to transfer it to your phone or something. And from that point on, it said, anytime he drags a WAV file in or he drags a file that's like this in, we're just going to put TWiT stuff on it. It could be the size.
The way it used to do this, and I don't know how it does it these days, is literally by the length. You would think, well, you must be looking at the file in some way. No, it just says the length.
Oh, wow.
And so, because what else is it going to do? It's not going to analyze the music and say, well, I could tell that's Bruce Springsteen. It's going to say, there was a song that was exactly 2 minutes and 13.7 seconds long, and it was from the Beach Boys, and it's going to put that album art on
it. That's interesting.
So it is, because on a wave, that's all it's got is the actual contents of the wave. No metadata and the length of the song. So it has no other way of of doing this. And that's a pretty primitive, as you might imagine. Yeah, primitive
not,
way of
not a lot
doing
to guess there.
I think the longer a show, a podcast is, the more likely you'd have a unique album art, but maybe not, you know, but most songs are under 3 or 4 minutes, right? So there's going to be a lot of collisions.
But ultimately, yes, turning off that automatically assigned thing should solve your problem.
And use MP3s. Why are you using Waves?
Because they sound better.
No, they don't.
Oh boy, I'm not participating in this part.
Well, they
no, it's
do,
interesting because I do a lot of work.
If you were getting a wave from us, for instance, that's true. Right. But you're getting an MP3 from us. It's never going to sound better than the MP3.
Yeah, he's talking about.
Well, I'm talking about for music.
For your music, I completely understand. Yeah, you don't want to use a compressed format. Absolutely.
Right.
Can I recommend though? There are formats like Apple Lossless or FLAC that do support metadata.
I use those.
Yeah. And you don't have this problem with Apple Lossless or FLAC because they support metadata.
Yeah, I do MP4 all the time.
Yeah. So. And those are Apple Lossless and FLAC are just like Waves. Basically, that's the only difference is they're Waves with metadata.
And the only reason I send people Waves instead is they'll be importing them back into a Pro Tools thing.
That makes sense.
No conversion.
Does Pro Tools not natively support FLAC or Apple Lossless? That seems like
not that I know of.
Yeah, thank you very much. Boy, that's ridiculous. But you know,
it's old. It's like it's my Microsoft Word.
I know. It's PCM.
It's what everybody everybody's
using.
They want PCM audio. They just want just the bits, man.
Right, exactly. So, and a lot of it now is 32-bit. So there aren't a lot of things that support that.
Yeah, right. Well, that makes sense. Yes, you kind of do use
one other quick question. On my wife's M1 laptop, she has it hooked to an older Mac, the Thunderbolt display.
Yeah.
And it will, on occasion, turn off for no reason.
Oh,
it'll go black.
Oh, my wife's
listening. And I've got all the settings turned off, so it's not sleeping.
My wife's
and so what
right
we end
now.
Up having to do is to open the top, get it to work, and close it again. Is that the way to have to do it?
So I used to have this problem a lot with the Thunderbolt.
It's not a printer question.
No, it's not.
And my poor wife has been complaining about this for years.
Yeah, it's an energy saving feature. You can read dozens of Reddit threads about this.
Well, now, wait a minute. Does it go dark? Or does it, when she turns it on, start dark?
It goes dark.
It goes dark. Oh, yeah. That is an energy saving problem.
Yeah. Yeah. However. Yeah,
now on my, I have a new M1 Max laptop that it does the same thing with my external display where it starts dark. But then I just open the top and close it and it works.
So you're running in clamshell mode and you want it to just work, but occasionally it does that. And
so you can't turn off sleep.
You can, but there's still something that's not communicating
because it's in clamshell.
Specifically,
right?
the clamshell mode plus this Thunderbolt display. These two specific things, for some reason, it is just the way of the world. Unfortunately, now
if it were a Windows machine, I would say go into the driver properties and turn off sleep because I don't know how you would do that on a Mac. But it is not unusual for the hardware, so like the Thunderbolt chip, to have a sleep mode also. And there may not be any way to control that directly on a Mac, on a Windows machine.
Yeah, because I have every sleep thing I can find, I always turn it off because DAWs hate sleep mode.
Right. They go, what the hell happened? Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not going to reconnect. You loser.
Exactly. Well, it will, but it breaks everything else.
Well, and I understand they expect everything to be consistently on. I don't know if there's a way
to
do that.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Sorry
about
that.
Hey, it's really great to talk to you. What kind of music do you produce?
It's a lot of alternative, abstract, classical, that kind of stuff.
Wonderful.
Wow, cool.
Anything we would know?
There's a woman by the name of Janet Fetter.
Uh-huh.
She has a couple albums that I worked on that are great.
How fun. Well,
Feder.
Feder. Okay. Not the attorney, Janet Fetter.
No, there's an album called This Close, which is great.
Well, that's cool.
We'll definitely check that out.
Very nice to meet you.
Have the right album art when
you meet you too.
Yeah. Have a great. Oh yeah. Look at there. There she is. She's performing. She's actually on YouTube. If you wanna. You want to listen.
There are a few things on YouTube, mostly on Bandcamp, though.
Yeah, I see the Bandcamp. Yeah. Woo. Very nice. Thank you, Jeff. Have a great day.
All right, you take care.
Great way to end the show with us not knowing what the hell to do.
Hey, at least we solved the first question.
I think, you know, used to be a problem on Windows where the network card would go to sleep. And you could go into the prep properties of the hardware and say, no, never sleep. And I'm betting you that, because remember, Thunderbolt was a joint venture of Intel and Apple. I'm betting you there's actually that feature is still in the hardware.
Maybe there might be some terminal command. I mean, but I've looked at so many different Reddit threads, and it always ends with I've owned four Macs and every single one of them does this. And it's just this specific arrangement of having clamshell mode and then the Thunderbolt display of yesteryear.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so it's just that
Lisa's
all.
Problem was we had weird monitors that were type C. There's a type C display monitor and I had to get just the right cable, the type C display cable. And then it seems to have solved the problem. I hope.
Yeah. Anyway. They get picky. They are picky. Yeah.
What a fun show this has been.
This was
Mike
a great
Sergeant.
Show. Yes.
We love our calls, and I will explain to you how we get these voicemails. Mm-hmm. So during the show, if you call 888-724-2884, we'll put you right into the Zoom. And then we can pick up. But if you call when we're not on the air, and we're on the air every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern, that's 11 to 1 Pacific time. If you call when we're on the air, well, we'll transfer you into the Zoom call and take it live. But if you call any other time of the day or week, you'll get a chance to leave us a voicemail. If you keep it to about 30 seconds, start with your first name and city, very likely, the likelihood is high that we will answer your call. We will not call you back.
Yeah, sadly, we're not going to call you back, but
we will answer your question on the air. We do this show, as I said, 11 to 1 Sundays, Pacific time, 2 to 5 Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, just like an old-time radio show. Remember those?
Those? Yeah, I remember.
Go to live.twit.tv. There's live audio, and unlike a radio show, there's video.
Whoa.
And, you know, if you can, watch the video because Mike is such a good looking guy. live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. That's open to all. There is a private club, the stadium level, if you will. That's our Club Twit. You can chat with us in Club Twit's Discord if you are a member. Why would you become a member? Oh, there's so many reasons. Besides the bloomin' onion, you also get ad-free versions of this show and every show we do, plus shows that are not out in public. They're in the club only, like Micah's Hands-On Macintosh, Hands-On Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show, Stacy's Book Club, The GizFizz, and on and on and on. In fact, Home Theater Geeks just got launched with Scott Wilkinson. Every week, another Home Theater Geeks in the club, and you can watch him do it live. He usually does it once a month. You can watch those live broadcasts in the Club Twit Discord. The Discord has lots of events as well that are just for club members. And there's a Twit Plus feed, which includes things that we don't put in the podcasts, like all the swearing. It's all in one spot at twit.tv/clubtwit. It does also, in all seriousness, keep us on the air, which we think is a good thing. Keeps the lights on, keeps the staff employed. It is more and more becoming the number one way we stay afloat. So thank you in advance for your $7 a month. twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, everybody can watch the show after the fact. There's an on-demand version, ads included, at twit.tv/ATG. Or is it ATTG?
Both.
Both. You choose ATG or ATTG. There's also a YouTube channel dedicated to Ask the Tech Guys. I don't know what that address is, but if you go to twit.tv/ATG, there's a link right there. You can click that. Best way to get any of our shows is to subscribe in your favorite podcast client. Just, you know, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just find a client you like and subscribe. And that way it all gets downloaded behind the scenes, middle of the night, automatically without your paying any attention to it. But the next time you get in the car, oh, look, I've got a new Ask the Tech Guys or any of our shows. So that's the best way to do it. Just subscribe. Actually, we have these special feeds that are everything feeds. Mm-hmm. So there's all Twitch shows. That's just one feed. You subscribe, you get them all. There's an all Micah all the time. There's an all Leo all the time, all Jason all the time, all Ant all the time. You subscribe to those individual ones, you'll get all the shows we're a part of. I think the all Twit feed would do it. And then you just get every show and you get, you know, like a potpourri of fun, and you just pick the one you want. Anyway, those are a few ways that you can get the show. During the show, call.twit.tv is our Zoom handle. 888-724-2884 is the phone number. And the emails are atg@twit.tv. Mike is going to be back on Tuesday with Rosemary.
Indeed. Actually, this week it'll be Christopher Lawley, iPad connoisseur, who will be joining me, and we'll be talking about, he was at the Apple event as well.
Oh, nice.
So we'll be wrapping up our coverage of every operating system feature that was announced at WWDC.
That's iOS Today, Tuesdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
After that, of course, Mac Break Weekly, so you can make your whole day.
Your whole Apple-y day.
All Apple-y. And of course, Tech News Weekly on Thursdays with Jason Howell.
Yes, absolutely. And remember, join the club so you can also watch Hands on Mac.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing on Hands on Mac these days?
Right now, I'm covering window management. So it's been several episodes about all the different ways that you can manage windows on the Mac, which they've continued to add more and more. So there's a lot to dig into. Stage Manager coming soon.
I am getting, as you know, a brand new Mac, probably arriving Wednesday. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't have it in time for MacBreak Weekly, but I'll have it in time for this show. And I decided to start from scratch.
Nice.
So I'll show you how I set up a Mac. Maybe we'll do that on next Sunday.
That'll be fun.
Because I have a process. I mean, when I say start from scratch, I don't have to manually download everything.
Right.
I have a way.
Yes.
I have a magical way.
There's a magical way.
And I will show you that. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great geek week. Micah Sargent.
And Leo Laporte.
Goodbye. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of home theater geekitude.